Good morning, everyone. Let's take our seats. We'll call our session for this morning to order. It's a pleasure to be able to introduce to you Pastor H.B. Horn, Jr., who is the pastor at the Greater Mount Calvary Church of God in Christ. Pastor Horn, we appreciate you being with us. Thank you so much. Please rise for the invocation.
Gracious God and Eternal Father, we do thank you as we come together for this gathering. It is our pleasure and joy to be here, and I pray that this team that you've selected and put together will continue to serve in an order that you would have them. It is my prayer, O God, that they would utilize the wisdom that you would order their footsteps, direct them in the path that they should go, and make them good stewards over that that you made them the overseer of. I ask you, O God, to bless our Mayor Leppard, bless him. Those that work with him, let them continue to work as a team. And I'm asking you to continue to cover this city. Let them, God, guide and do what you would have them to do in order to make the city be the best city that you would have it to be. And I want to thank you for not allowing catastrophic situations to occur in our city. And I ask you, O God, to bless this team to be the team and produce the type of things you would have it to be. Order the footsteps of the leaders. Let them work in a path. Let them work in the nature that you would be satisfied with. Now, most Heavenly Father, we do thank you for what you've done. In your matchless name we pray. Amen and amen.
Ms. Atkins, would you lead us the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Pastor Horn, thank you very much for being with us. Madam Secretary?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. We have three speakers this morning. Our fourth speaker, Ms. Wendy Hines, has canceled. Our first speaker is going to be Robert Sicario, Yaha Gusha, I'll get it right, and Deborah Gibson. You would come forward while I recite the rules for speaking. Citizens and other visitors attending city council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council, or while attending the city council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the sergeant at arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. You have 3 minutes to speak. When you see the amber light, that means you have 30 seconds, and the red light means stop. Mr. Sicario? I'm sorry? Excuse me, I'm sorry. Checkerell?
Yes, Robert Checkerell.
Robert Checkerell.
Yes.
Okay.
Information given this hunt, it has to do with voter registration fraud.
Okay.
We're about to give her a 7-state jail felony convictions I have on my record from 2002 to 2009. Last week I tried to get my voter registration card, but I did not receive it. There's a voter abstract conviction. I wish somebody would look at it. Look at August 3rd, 2009. On August 2nd, a newspaper came out about August 3rd, my voter registration was denied immediately after the newspaper article. My conviction was 609. I had 6 state jail felonies before that with 3 probation. The voter registration
office, you want those passed out to the council?
Well, I don't have only one copy.
Okay.
I don't know who has it now. Can someone look at it, please? Or? Give the mayor reference and Dwayne. I really appreciate this. It's very important.
Please go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt.
Mayor Leppard, the first copy you see is my last conviction. Inside it, you'll see a newspaper article about me on August 2nd. Also, you'll see an abstract of felony conviction I have circled dated August 3rd. Another one you'll see is a disposition of my case. And the other cases are 7 state jail felonies, and in order, I have three probations that I listed right underneath that one you're looking at. Since 2002, I've had these convictions. And I've been able to vote ever since. I never voted, but I was able to, because I was able to get my voter registration card. Now, last week I tried to get my voter registration card, but I was denied because of the abstract of felony conviction. I've had major problems to find out where that information came from. If it came from the DPS, if it came from the court where I got convicted. The court I came from, Criminal District Court Number 6, has denied that it sent voter registration any information about my conviction. The voter registration office, his name is Danny Alexander, has told me they don't have any information of my probation or my conviction ever since last August 2nd. So I have three probations and six state jail felony convictions, and I was able to vote ever since. And how the process is supposed to go is, I'm supposed to get a letter. I have 30 days to respond for the voter registration office. If I don't get responded, I'm automatically suspended. What concerns me is that date, August 3rd, on that abstract of felony conviction, and you see the newspaper article dated August 2nd. If that's the only way that you can stop me from voting, I have a major concern of who's ever enforcing these rules. They're not doing anything at all about illegal voting, maybe possibly going on in Dallas County. And
we appreciate you being with us. Again, I'm afraid I'm just, myself nor the other council people probably aren't familiar with some of the law. What I can ask to do is if there's an attorney that can visit with you, but again, I think this is going to be a county issue, not a city issue. But nevertheless, if you want to move over to the side, we'll have an attorney that will double visit with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Kevin.
It's the Dallas Elections Department, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, Elections Department. Yaha Kashaw is not present. Deborah Gibson. Those are all our speakers this morning, Mr. Mayor, that have signed up to speak as morning speakers.
I'm sorry, Madam Attorney. Madam Secretary.
No, I didn't get my law degree yet, man.
No other speakers. And the first item on our agenda then is the minutes. If I could have those have been distributed, if I could have a motion on those, please. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. I'd like to introduce former Mayor Pro Tem of the City Council, and that's Mr. Max Wells. Mr. Wells, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. Let's move to the consent agenda now. There were a number of items on the consent agenda that were requested to be considered individually by various members of the council. Let me walk through those with you. First of all, item number 5, Ms. Margolin requested that that be considered individually. Item number 36, Mr. Newman. Over on the addendum, item number 3, Mr. Allen, myself. Item number 5, Mr. Newman. With that, if I could have a motion, so the ones to be considered individually will be 5 and 36, and then over on the addendum, 3 and 5. So 5, 6. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And the record shows that motion was for both the consent items on the regular as well as the addendum agenda.
Yes.
With that, Madam Secretary, item number 5.
Yes, sir. Item 5 is a 3-year service contract for temporary information technology professionals, HRT staffing services, in the amount of $2,622,000. Management recruiters of Woodbridge Incorporated in the amount of $505,664. Infoware Tech Incorporated in the amount of $458,492. Sierra Infosight Incorporated in the amount of $324,480. Global Information Systems in the amount of $154,716, Stark Holding in the amount of $57,425, and Landsoft Incorporated in the amount of $5,987, lowest responsible bidders of 27. Total is not to exceed $4,130,964,
ma'am. Ms. Margolin, Mr. Atkins pulled this. Mr. Atkins, would you like to begin?
Yes, please.
Mr. Cook, please.
Mayor, you know, the reason why we pulled this, me and Councilwoman Della Hoffa, we meet with Dave Cook and Dave Wiggins on every other week to discuss some different projects. Last week, and I'm going to be brief and Della can finish it up, that we were looking at why do we have so many big contracts and we have so small percentage of minority contracts, like 1% or 2%, how we build a capacity. And this is a good example of what we talked about last week that you brought up and Councilmember Salazar brought up, that these are small businesses that we are getting 1% or 2% is a good thing. And this is a prime example of this project. Dave, can you just kind of explain exactly what we found out and how we're doing this project versus one last week that people said, well, this is getting 1% or 2%.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you. This is a great example of what we call unbundling a service. This contract, very similar 3 years ago, was put out on the street as a all-or-nothing bid effort, and one company got the bid as the best bidder, and when we do it as all or nothing, that's what it's going to be, just one winner. They were a non-minority firm. This time, we staff started talking about this item several months ago as the old one was expiring, trying to figure out a better way to do it. And we unbundled this, and the unbundling deals with the different skill sets that we need for the temporary staff. These are all information technology staffing, but those aren't all equal. In some projects, we'll want somebody with a great deal of experience in maybe a specific programming language. Others, we need much more elementary, rudimentary, entry-level skills. And this allowed us to parse it out, if you will, unbundle it, and allow multiple bidders to compete for pieces of the project. It still could have been that one bidder could get the entire award if they were the best bidder on each and every line. But in this case, you can see we had how many bidders? 27 separate firms submitted bids. So that gives us a great sense that we're getting some great pricing. It does mean that it gets parceled out into smaller pieces and no vendor gets a big home run hit, if you will, but we think that's a good thing. Many of these vendors are the successful vendors. Four of them are MWBE firms. Others that are getting some of this award are committed to subcontract with additional MWBE firms. So the combination of the unbundling that we look at and consider carefully, plus our outreach from our staff, Aday and Chandra and their staff, the outreach that goes to the community, the bidding community, the vending community, before we take bids, not after, but before, to get those 27 bidders, that had a great result this time as well.
Thank you. Also, Mayor, a second thing, it's in a 3-year contract for temporary of the deal. Is there a reason that we would not do this in-house? Is there a reason we would not hire staff employees or hire people inside the city of Dallas versus have it temporary for a long period? And the reason why we're doing that is simply because of a price, or maybe because it's a one-time deal?
Mostly it's project-specific. Most of our IT needs are met with city staff, ongoing, typically long-term employees with skill sets knowledgeable of our systems. But from time to time, we have either we have short-term needs, and that can be caused by vacancies in our staff that can happen suddenly. But more typically, it's project-specific. A project gets added to the needs list, if you will, put on Warris Levine and his staff's plate that we need this done. We need it done now. A couple of recent examples are the e-campaign changes that had to be made, and not done yet, but nearly finished with the lobbyist registration programming that had to be done to set up those new systems. Those are short-term projects. Once the projects are initiated, we would continue maintenance of those projects with city staff. In those examples, we're not buying off-the-shelf programs. We're developing something ourselves and installing it. Other examples are when we go through major system installations or upgrades, our financial system, for instance. When we undertake a major upgrade or change in that system, we may need somebody for 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 months, and we'll bring them in as a stopgap.
So the short answer is, number one, we do this temporarily. If we hire a staff person, they might be here 10 to 15 years, so the price of a government will be higher. So that's why we're doing it temporarily.
Yes,
thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Hoffman, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I'm going to move to approve this item. But again, the reason Tanel and I pulled this is, as he said, we meet with procurement every other week and go over the contracts with them. And I thought this was a good example of what we talked about last week, that, you know, there's tiny percentages given to MWBEs, but in some cases, those tiny percentages are their foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And so we can't ignore that. We definitely want to make our MWBEs prime at some point. But when there are advantages like the unbundling that David talked about, I think we need to take advantage of it. And there's some very happy vendors here, even though they did get a small percentage of this contract. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. And David, you don't feel by breaking this up that we cost anything in terms of additional costs of the city?
We definitely think it's a savings.
Yeah.
We definitely think it's a savings by breaking it up.
Yeah. Ms. Margolin, do you want to add something?
My concern about this is simply the sheer numbers. I mean, if we're looking at $4 million over 3 years, that's about $1.3 million a year. So, I mean, for that, we could hire 1,300,000 people. It just seems like an enormous number. So that's what I'm wanting to understand.
It's a large operation. Our CIS department has a staffing of over 200 regular full-time folks. We may not use all of these dollars. This isn't a commitment to spend these dollars. It sets up these prices for these different skill sets for the if and when we need them. We have some current project needs that we can see right now and on the near horizon, but this will also cover us for the three-year period for things that we don't even know are coming yet. So it's not a firm commitment to spend these dollars, but it is a reasonable estimate.
Thank you.
I'd also interject two things and turn it to Mr. Allen. One is, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Prince, but by the time you took an IT person and fully loaded them, health benefits, pension, everything else, you may very well be way above $100,000 in terms of that number.
For the high-skilled, experienced folks, absolutely.
And I think the other thing that's important in looking at the economics of the city or any entity is we want to be real careful that we don't staff, and IT is a perfect example, at kind of the maximum need.
Right.
In other words, if we can do it something that's more constant need and then use outsource in effect for those times or those special projects, that's going to be, in the long run, a much more economic way to handle this. Otherwise, we've got additional costs at some point of layoffs, all sorts of additional costs that come in with long-term employment that you can kind of give this a chance to manage the ups and downs of the demand that come in on a department like this. So
absolutely.
Yes. That's an important thing. Mr. Allen, please.
Just real quick, I'm going to do a real quick plug. I believe it's February the 23rd. We're going to have a MWBE certification right here at City Hall starting at 9 o'clock. So from 9 to 11, February 23rd, a great opportunity to come, learn about the program, learn how to get certified, learn how to be part of the program. All right?
Right.
All
right. And I think, again, very good effort, as was raised by Mr. Atkins and Ms. Hosso, just the fact that you went from one bidder to large numbers of bidders. So we got other people involved, and it gives us a way to make sure that we are indeed getting the best bang for the buck. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Now, Secretary, 36, please.
Yes, 36 is a professional service contract with Trans System Corporation for the engineering design of bridge and erosion control improvements for the Fair Oaks Crossing Bridge over Jackson Branch Tributary.
Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Cook. Dave, you and I, when at our meeting yesterday, started the conversation about some of my concerns in this. My questions go to 2004 COs, and why are we financing a 2010 transaction with 2004 COs? That's the first question. It seems a mismatch.
It's a good question, because that is a long time has passed. We found ourselves faced with a situation in 2003 or 4 with an EPA consent decree to undertake several projects in a very short time frame, millions of dollars worth of projects that the EPA said the city had to do, period, quickly. We needed to make a commitment and show funding for these projects to the EPA. They would not, you know, wait for the next bond program. So we quickly developed the list of projects, worked with the EPA, of course, on the project list, estimated those costs, and quickly went the very first opportunity, the quickest way to do that was the COs, issued those COs to fund those projects and show the commitment to the EPA.
The COs are 10-year obligations?
COs were 10 years.
Do they require council approval, or is that manager can do?
Oh, absolutely require council approval.
Okay, yeah. So the council approved back in 2004 to issue COs?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. So my question is, why did it take 6 years to get this done?
The projects are major in nature, although the EPA, as I said, needed to see the city's commitment to those projects. That was part of their consent decree.
Commitment meaning borrowing money, or commitment meaning getting it done?
A financial commitment, and once we had the funding in place, that showed the commitment to the EPA. That's what they needed to see. So we move through those projects. This is an additional project over and above that EPA list, but it is done with project savings. As I said, we had to quickly put that list together and estimate the cost. In some cases, we were a little high or had better bids than we thought. This is an additional project that's being done.
My concern, and this goes to Mary, I guess, and Dave, since you're, my concern is we have 2004 obligations, but we're funding a 2010 project. And this goes back to a year and a half ago about the whole issue of the city going in debt and not actually needing the money at the time we go in debt, whether it be bond programs for 30-year obligations. It just seems like a mismatch. I use the example of my small company. I don't borrow money until I'm ready to write the check. So I'm still a little confused.
Well, I agree with you on and the proposal we put on the bond program shows you, I think, our commitment to doing that.
I appreciate that.
Right. But here's the situation. When the federal government comes in and orders you to do something as a consent decree, they want to see that you're going to do that. And so you make a decision about, should I get this money and get it out here and show them they're committed, or should I risk being hauled to court and them telling me I didn't show a commitment and I need to do more? So it's a balancing act in these cases. I would have much preferred that we got all this done and out of the way. It didn't happen. When you could get a consent order, you're treading on dangerous ground. So
the six-year delay, is that a function of, and this is not my district, so I'm looking at it from the perspective of the city. It could easily be in my district. It's a city issue of matching funds. So was there a reason for the delay, or is just the project queued 6 years?
The size and scope of the projects had that nature of taking that long to get done until we identified the full cost.
And they wanted us fully committed,
yes,
before they were willing to say, okay, we'll sign on a consent decree and you and I agree to do this.
Many of the projects had multiple stages. Design took a great deal of time, and then the construction followed. But we needed to fund it all up front.
And refresh my memory again, COs are 5 years? Those are equipment notes. Equipment notes are 5 years.
COs are 10.
10 years. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, well, it draws pause about the financing element of our city when we're doing something in 10 from funding something from 4. Mayor, I move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Madam Secretary, addendum item number 3, please.
Addendum item 3 is an ordinance amending Chapter 48C of the Dallas City Code to prohibit the immobilization booting of vehicles on parking lots in the city that do not provide a receipt in exchange for payment of a parking fee, and 2, eliminate video audit procedures as an alternative to providing parking fee receipts.
Thank you. Ms. Huntley?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In August, this council passed the booting ordinance to ensure that visitors across our city who went to restaurants and retail and businesses paid their money were not unfairly booted. It was in response to problems we'd had, particularly in DeBellum, a district, an area that Councilmember Medrano and I share. And we made the decision to make it effective in DeBellum as of January 1. However, the rest of the city would not have those protections until July 1. Unfortunately, what we found is after January 1, when DeBellum was protected and we had no more problems with booting, we found these unscrupulous booting practices move into downtown Dallas. And both Ms. Medrano and I have had numerous phone calls, numerous emails, numerous letters of folks who paid their fee and then were booted. We need to implement these same protections to ensure that folks who visit our downtown, especially this week during the NBA All-Star Game, when we want to roll out our welcome mat, we want to make sure these folks are protected from these unscrupulous practices and have a great experience when they visit downtown Dallas. For this reason, we are seeking to amend the ordinance to make it effective immediately across the city to ensure that all of our citizens and visitors are protected and that a receipt is required if they go into a parking lot that chooses and makes the decision to boot in response to non-payment. So this receipt practice, we believe, has been particularly effective in DeBellum. We believe it will be effective in downtown and across the city. So I move to approve this item.
It's been moved and seconded. Mr. Kerwick, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me just echo Ms. Hunt and Ms. Medrano. And put a caveat out there to say that when things are taken advantage of, it brings to the table a need to set a policy and sometimes even to stiffen it up. A personal experience, I went down to DeBellum. No, I did not get booted, but a friend in another car, and we went to Tucker's Blues, Barry. And 15 seconds after we were out of that car was booted. And there was simply no understanding that the person had that was doing the booting. He did not know who I was, but I put myself in GQ Citizen's position. And if he had the attitude with me, and he carried that attitude over to the friendly visitors and folks that are patronizing downtown and our city, they're in for a tough night. I think until we get some attitude adjustments and we get some governing rules and put the proper equipment and things in place, that we should suspend this booting. Not just for the All-Star Weekend, because there are going to be other activities next week and next year and forthcoming, and we are trying to generate activity in a new downtown. With that, I will say that as we begin, and Mr. Newman and Mr. Cadane, in entertaining the parking meters, downtown. That's going to be something else that I think that we need to take a look at, and not just in booting, but in the parking meters and what it is going to take for us to attract people to come to downtown Dallas and to be assured that they're going to be safe, their cars are going to be safe, and they can have a great time. Now, that's how you build a downtown.
We have a lot of things going. We have a new convention center hotel coming. There's a lot of excitement. The Super Bowl is coming next year. But more importantly, we want people to come down and start enjoying what we already have, the restaurants and the fun, the activities, the shopping, and they can't do it under the threat of being booted. Now, I'll close with that, but I'll suggest to some of the booters that all over my district, I got some 18-wheelers that are illegally parked throughout my district. And if you want to do some booting, you can certainly come and boot those 18-wheelers, and you can make more money booting an 18-wheeler than you can a Volkswagen. So that's just one point that I will say. But with that, I would be voting for an immediate boot beginning tomorrow, instructing the city secretary, should we move this forward, to purchase the necessary advertisements so that we can have them posted properly throughout by way of our city attorney and his direction in the Dallas Morning News on tomorrow, so that this ordinance will take immediate effect. Lastly, the towing companies, because there seems to be that if we boot, then they're going to tow. I want to say to these towing companies, I want you to hear my voice, we will not experience another Texas OU booting fiasco, so it will not be any abuse of towing companies. You too will be under the watchful eye if you tow. Now, we want to also say to the citizens, I do, and that is, don't take advantage of it and think that you can just go somewhere and park. Because should you, the citizen, park, and you park illegally, then you will have to follow the law, and you will have to pay that price of whatever that will be, too. So we all have some skin in this game. The citizens have the right to come in and park, but you have the responsibility to do it right. The towing companies, don't come out here doing no illegal towing and excessive towing and watching people like vultures and waiting till they get out their cars, and then you go and snatch their car, because we're going to be watching you, the towing companies, as well. Now, I think I've said enough. I think you all understand where I'm going and what I mean, and I mean exactly what I say. We need to move forward with the booting. Towing companies, don't get out of line. Let's enjoy a successful weekend and henceforth. And let's create what we're going to do downtown. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Allen.
As a former auditor, you learn to look at the facts. To me, it's pretty simple. Do we or do we not have a group of people preying on other people? Do we or do we not have a group of people preying on other people? If the facts say so, then I say throw these punks in jail and throw away the key. I'm going to repeat that. If we have people preying on other people, I say throw them in jail and throw away the key. I'm going to say it three times so there's no misunderstanding where I'm coming from. People that prey on other people, throw them in jail, throw away the key. Three times I've said that, so I want to make sure we understand that. On the other hand, if the facts are such that we have individuals that want to roll the dice, in this case, park and not pay, then I say there needs to be a fine. There needs to be a fine for that activity that they've done. To understand the facts, and that's what we're after here today, let's understand the facts and just make sure we make the right decision. Right decision, not so much. July 1st, we know what the decision is. July 1st, it will be banned. Booting will be banned without giving a receipt. But let's don't try people in public opinion without making sure we have all the facts available to us. With that being said, I visited yesterday with some folks from the Public Works Department that go out every single day and visit with the folks where the complaints are coming in, because I want to make sure that, again, if I've got folks preying on people, well, I want to jump on them just like you jump on them, just as hard as you can. But if I don't have those folks, I want to make sure that I'm not in a court of public opinion crucifying people for something that they're not doing without having the facts. With that, I'm going to ask Mr. Tidlow and Ms. McHenry to come forward, please. these from the public works area. We'll start with Mr. Tidlow. Would you please describe what you do for the city and how long you've been with the city?
I've been with the city for 23 years.
And what do you do?
I'm in the I'm the manager of Public Works and Transportation, Transportation Regulation.
Okay. Ms. Tidlow, what do you do? How long have you been with the city and what do you do? Ms. McKinney.
I've been with the city 14 and a half years. I'm Assistant Director of Public Works and Transportation.
Okay. This question is going to go to Mr. Tidlow. How many permits does the city have allowing companies to put boot on cars?
We permit two companies at this time.
So there's two companies that are out there, and in this big city we have two companies that we permit. In your job, you investigate complaints concerning booting, and therefore you know these companies pretty well. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
What has been your experience with these companies, and how has these companies handled the complaints? So give us a background on what your experience has been.
Well, when the ordinance went into effect in October, on October 1st of this year, of 2000, I'm sorry, when the ordinance went into effect October 1st of 2009, and we got the companies permitted, they have worked with our investigators when we have a complaint. They've been willing to make refunds if we find a problem. They've made refunds.
Gary, you've got to speak up and get the mic, please.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. They've been willing to work with the city. They've made refunds on several complaints that we've found problems with. They've also made refunds on some good faith refunds where there wasn't a problem, there wasn't a violation of the code, but they made a refund just as a good faith effort.
When you've done and gone out on your on the complaints, what percentage of complaints would you say were that you looked into that really weren't warranted in a sense? Where I'm going, what percentage would you say after you've looked into it that they were truly booted according to the law?
There's about 85 that there were found to be in compliance with the code.
85%?
85%, yes, sir. We have received 105 complaints through February 8th, and 85% of that total have been legitimate boots that we've found.
The other 15%, were those, did you see any malice where it looks like somebody was preying on somebody?
Some of that 15% are the good faith refunds. We didn't differentiate between a violation or a refund or a good faith refund. We just put it as a refund. So some of those, but we haven't seen a malice in what we've done so far.
So the preying on the public, you have not seen that?
No, sir.
The if you were to come downtown and park downtown and you correctly put your money in a manual meter, would you feel concerned that you might be booted based on what you know?
No, sir. I'd be very cautious, make sure I was cognizant of the space I was parked in and the space that I paid on the box.
Does it appear that the operating procedures from these companies, and again, this will go away in July 1st, but at this moment in time, does it appear that the operating procedures that you monitor, that you see and work with, and going out and witness, does it appear that these operating procedures are adequate more, and even above being adequate to you?
We're going to enforce whichever policy the council authorizes. We haven't seen a problem with the current one at this time, but we're going to enforce whichever policy is
correct
adopted.
But the procedures that are being used by the companies today to go out and verify that to boot someone, the procedures that you've seen, you reviewed, appear to be adequate.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Ms. McHenry, I'm going to ask you one question real quick. If you were to come downtown and accurately put your money in one of these pay meters, would you feel comfortable that you would not be booted, or would you have concerns?
I think the same response. I'll just be cognizant of the area that I'm parking in and making sure I'm following the directions of the pay boxes.
Okay. Do we have other... has anyone put in a receipt, a machine yet that's out there?
We currently have information that there are 11 electronic pay stations mm-hmm. in place at this time.
Have you had any complaints?
We have had complaints on, to my knowledge, at least one of those electronic
pay stations. What was the nature of that complaint?
The nature of that complaint was one individual who had paid to park there was leaving and gave a non-transferable receipt to a citizen that was pulling into the lot to use.
And what happened?
Their vehicle was booted.
And the reason it was booted?
For non-payment.
Okay. And they complained about that?
Yes, sir, they did.
And that, okay. The one last question to y'all is that even if we do away with the booting today, they'll still be able to tow, correct?
Yes, sir, they would be.
In your professional opinion, from what you've seen out there, is it mobilize the vehicles? Is it in the best interest of the citizen, or is it easier for the citizen to have their car booted on spot, or is it easier or to have it towed away? What would be your opinion on that?
Booting is a less evasive form action. The vehicle is not moved from the space. It's less expensive. The citizen or vehicle owner driver does not have to find alternative transportation to the storage facility to retrieve their vehicle. So the booting would be less burdensome on the citizen at this time.
Okay. I want to thank both of y'all very much for coming down and visiting and helping me with this, and mainly for your service to the city and the passion that you got. I truly enjoyed visiting with y'all yesterday and feel comfortable that, you know, our citizens are in good hands because y'all watch that day in and day out. So thank you very much for doing that. Councilman, we've just heard from experts that do this day in and day out, and I think what we've heard is that, you know, at this moment, there's policies, procedures already in place. From what I've heard, it's not a predatory. They're not being preyed upon. We told the businesses as a council, we made decisions as a council that we would do what we would do is on July 1st, all of this would change. And I see no reason to step this up at this moment in time, particularly in light of the fact that we haven't really done our homework. We haven't looked at it correctly enough, because at the end of the day, if we're talking about we got to do this rush because of this crowd that's coming, well, if these folks are so scrupulous, all they have to do is go out and get a wrecker and go pick them up, haul them off, and it takes 2 hours for that individual to run down and go get the car. Our booting, it's 30 minutes. They have to be there within 30 minutes. Or they possibly lose their permit, right? Because they have permits, rules to go by. So my personal opinion is that we will change this July 1st. If we change this today, that's fine. I don't have a problem with it. But realize that all you have to do is have a wrecker and come haul them off. You can do the same thing. I do not think it has been thought out very well. But that's my opinion. How many wrecker services do we have in Dallas, would you guesstimate?
The tollway services, we have 14.
So there's 14 that could be riding around, I guess, and the parking companies could hire them. With that, Mayor, I'll leave it at that, and thank you for the extra time.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Mr. Atkins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Medrano and Angela, I know this downtown, I know that y'all probably more familiar with this practice than anyone else because it's in your district. But I have concerns when I get emails and I get memos from business people and residents who came in and stated that they got booted and they shouldn't have not got booted. My main concern is during the MLK holidays at the Black Bear Stadium over there, that there were 7 individuals who got booted, had to pay $105, 7 people. And there was no one there to referee that if they paid or didn't pay. The question was to the Hawkeye, the company who booted them, is, hey, you need to pay, we're not going to boot you. And when you got a business who had to pay $735 out of his pocket right then and there with no compromise, I think that's a problem. Now, Mr. Gary, I understand what you're saying, but when you have problems like that and you got a booting company who's booted something on a property and there's no referee, and you, it's like you said, it might be 15% is bad, but the other 85% is good. But that 15% is still a negative impact for the first-time visitors to come downtown, and we're trying to build downtown. And I know you can't be everywhere on even given day, but to me that's a problem. And we try to build downtown up, and we got the NBA coming, we got the Super Bowl coming, we got things coming to the city of Dallas, and we're trying to build the city of Dallas. All I say is fair of what? But if you see a particular company who moved from one location to another location, and you got 7 people who get booted, 7 people who get booted, and there are no compromise. If I was that booting company, I would say, hey, pay the $5 or whatever to the meter, whatever, and compromise. But those people who visit downtown, who go and spend $25 or $100 to the show and come back out and their car is booted, and all the recourse they got is pay the money, else. To me, that's a problem. Now, Gary, can you explain to me those 15% of the people who do complain, do they have a right to complain? And there are different, those 15% different, are they different between the 85%? Is they a different?
I'm not sure I understand your
question. The question, I think my colleague Jerry asked you, and you said 15% of the complaint is confirmed, the other 85 is not confirmed.
Right. Part of that 15%, the company refunds before we actually get the complaint, or they refund them before we actually have an opportunity to go out and look at the complaint and investigate it. But we receive a complaint, the company addresses it before we have an opportunity to, because they lodge the complaint with the company as well. The company takes it upon themselves to go ahead and resolve whatever issue it may be. So part of that 15% is our complaints that the company may resolve before we have an opportunity to.
But that 15% is a high number. Because if we take the 15%, and 15% of those people who complain is the first time visitor downtown, to me that's a problem. You know, maybe those 15% is not a first time visitor, then it's not a big problem. But if I came out of town for the first time and visit downtown, to me, I would tell my people, don't come downtown because I can get booted. And that's a negative impact on the city of Dallas. Because they're 15%. To me, that's a high number. So can you tell me the difference, those 15% people who complain, are they citizens of Dallas, are they in-town villagers?
I don't have that information in front of me. We didn't.
Could that information be determined?
We could look at it, yes, sir.
I would like to look at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I will be supporting Angela and my colleague, Ms. Councilmember Angela Hunt, on this agenda item. I think the parking lot of the booty companies, just right now they're just out trying to make some extra money. And it's absolutely wrong. I've gotten some letters in my district where cars have been booted. And at this point, it's just money hungry. and that's just the bottom line. They're trying to make some extra money. And because of that, I will be supporting Angela on this agenda item. So are we ready to vote on the item so we can move forward?
Ms. Pedrado, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I was just reading four emails that I received just today regarding this weekend of people that were wrongfully looted, and we're going to look into that as well. But last week, Ms. Hunt and I contacted all the parking lot owners to let them know that this was coming before the council. A lot of the parking lot owners thanked us for giving them a heads up. Some sent emails in support of this, and a lot of them thought that the people that are coming downtown to become a more vibrant downtown was to make sure that the people coming downtown have a pleasant experience, that they will come back. And this is not a pleasant experience. When you virtually have every weekend one or two complaints, this weekend I had four complaints of people being booted wrongfully. And we have someone from Deep Ellum, Barry Anino. And Barry, if you'll come up, let us know, since we, since the ordinance took effect first in Deep Ellum on January 1st of this year, tell me what has your experience been, and let us know how the ordinance has been working in Deep Ellum.
There's been an air of peace that has settled over the neighborhood, because I can tell you, when people drive into your neighborhood and see four or five boots on cars, whether they pay or not, you're turning around. So I think until we get it solved, we need to stop the booting and then fix the system. But right now, it feels nice. People are coming and staying. So
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming down and letting us know how Deep Ellum is going. Colleagues, this has gone on a lot. And I think it's just like any other business. If you go to a restaurant, they give you a receipt. If you go anywhere, you pay, you get a receipt. And I think it's rightfully that, and they could do it very simply. We gave them till July to enact on this, either having an attendant or a machine, automated machine. I've only seen one in Deep Ellum, so maybe since I last checked, 10 more have come up. Barry, do you know how many machines? I've only seen one over there by Baylor Hospital.
I haven't seen one change whatsoever. Any machines, no extra attendance at all. We're just back to business of 5 years ago, where some of the companies will give you a ticket and put it on your window.
Okay.
That's it.
Thank you. Gary, do we know where these machines are, have been located?
That's not just in Deep Ellum. That's the citywide number.
Okay.
For the electronic pay boxes. I think he's correct. There's probably only one in
Deep
Ellum.
I've only seen one in Deep Ellum.
And the remainder are throughout, mostly downtown.
Okay. Thank you. As I said before, any other businesses that you go to, you pay, you get, you know, your bill, you pay, you get a receipt, which is proof that you paid for your meal or paid for your services or paid for whatever you did. So with this, I am going to totally support Ms. Hunt in this. It has started in our district, and I think that it's moving, or I know that it's moving toward downtown. And I think that we as council members need to put a stop to this. Thank you so much.
Ms. Hubridge.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Nino, could I ask you a couple of questions, please? We've heard a lot of talk today that there are grave concerns that if we go ahead and protect our visitors and businesses in downtown and elsewhere across our city from unscrupulous business practices such as booting, we're going to see an incredible uptick in towing of cars. I want you to tell us your experience since January 1 in Deep Ellum.
I've not heard of one car or seen one car being towed since that date.
So, what you're experiencing in Deep Ellum is not only a reduction in problems to visitors and businesses as a result of unscrupulous booting practices, but you're not seeing an uptick in towing, correct?
I haven't seen one tow truck.
Thank you, Mr. Nina. Let me talk with city staff for a second. Do you know whether or not, Mr. Titlow, every single person who has a problem with getting booted after they've paid in downtown Dallas contacts you?
They do not contact us. That is correct.
Okay. And so all of the folks who may come to downtown Dallas to go to one of our restaurants, go to one of our retail establishments, our downtown, which we're desperately trying to bring people to, you don't know whether or not they put their money in and then get booted. You have no way of knowing that, do you?
No.
Okay. Now, this 15% that you talked about that gets refunded, I can tell you, I think 15% is much too high for us to have 15% of the people who are going downtown paying their money and then coming back to their car and seeing a boot on it. I think 15% is high. I think 1% is high. I think 5% is high. I think 15% is unacceptable. And so this idea that, you know, it's only 15%. Well, first of all, 15% is too high. But secondly, I can tell you there are dozens of people, maybe hundreds of people we're not hearing from, who simply pay their money and they will not come back to downtown Dallas. And we cannot afford to lose that business. We cannot afford to lose that goodwill. And I think it's remarkable that we would think that 15% is okay as a percentage of folks who are unscrupulously booted. I can't agree with that at all. Is every space in downtown on these parking lots where they boot, is every single space painted well, and is it well lighted? Every single one of them? Because I've been to downtown, so think carefully before you answer.
That's part of what we investigate. That is, that may be a result of some of these refunds. We put the burden on the boot company under the city code.
And then do they have to come out and do they have to paint immediately, and do you watch them repaint these lanes?
No, the burden would be on the parking company itself to restripe it. And mark.
So you're telling me we don't necessarily follow up and make sure that these lanes where people have been unfairly booted and they can't tell if it's lane 15 or lane 12 where their parking space is, and they put the money in the slot that they believe is appropriate, and they get booted, and the booting company is kind enough to refund it after they've contacted my office and Ms. Medrano's office and you, I don't think that's a good business practice. And I think it's incumbent upon this council to protect the citizens of downtown, not a booting company that sends out guys in bulletproof vests to intimidate people once they're booted. Do you know, Mr. Titlow, if it's more expensive to tow or to boot a car?
It's more expensive to retrieve your vehicle from a tow.
No, that's not my question. On behalf of a business, on behalf of a parking lot, is it more expensive for them to engage booting companies or towing companies?
On behalf of the parking lot, they have no financial interest in either one, so it would cost them nothing either way.
Okay, but I think we just heard from Mr. Anino that we're not seeing any uptick in towing in Deep Ellum, and that would indicate to me, and would you agree it would indicate to you, that there isn't this divergence or change from using booting to using towing. Would you agree with that, if that's what's going on in Deep Ellum? Have you gotten complaints about towing, unscrupulous towing now in Deep Ellum?
None that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well, I appreciate my colleagues who are supportive of this measure. I think it's absolutely critical that we protect the citizens of downtown, the businesses in our downtown, and that we support them, and that we welcome visitors to our downtown without making them fear for the fact that they're going to get booted. It is amazing to me that while we're doing everything we can, putting in tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in our public-private partnerships to improve downtown, that we would even consider allowing this type of unscrupulous practice to go forward when at least 15% of the people who are being booted in our downtown are being booted unfairly. And so I think that's unacceptable, and I think we need to move swiftly, and that's why Ms. Medrano and I brought this forward. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Zatiski, please. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to sound, this may come as a surprise to Mr. Tidlow and Ms. McHenry, but I'm going to try not to sound like you're in a courtroom here and you're on the witness stand. I think a lot of my questions have been answered by questions that previous council members have asked. I just would like to know, since I heard from Mr. Carraway the very strong and distinct message that he was sending out that let's not switch from booting to towing as a way to deal with this. Can you tell me if the city, and I may be wrong on this, but I don't believe the city has any ability to control the practice of towing from the lots. How is that governed?
Chapter 48A of the Dallas City Code does regulate the towing in Dallas, the private property tows.
Okay.
And for them to remove a vehicle off of any private property, they have to have a contract with the property owner or manager for that property before they remove it, and signs have to be posted. But there's multiple signs. There's sections in the code.
Well, I guess my question is, but isn't part of the towing industry regulated at the state level where the city doesn't have any ability to come in and deal with it? In other words, if they're licensed here, they're licensed.
They all tow services have to be licensed.
All right, let me try it another way.
Okay.
If a parking lot owner decides to go out and use towing as a means to enforce lack of payment, is there anything that the city currently has on its books that would enable us to regulate that? And the second part of that is there anything that the city could do to change its current ordinances to deal with that? In other words, could we at some point, if indeed the fear of cars being towed versus booted started to take place, could we change an ordinance that would prohibit people, the towing companies, from towing from private property that a private business owns, prohibit them from having those cars towed for lack of payment?
We could revise Chapter 48A of the Dallas City Code. It would be a policy that council could do.
Okay. So we could change the ordinance in a way down the road if that became a problem, so that someone that owns a parking lot, entirely private property, could not engage. Well, I guess there's too much going on, Mr. Mayor. Maybe I'll just take a break until everybody settles down. Come on up, please.
If you can lend light to this, you can hear.
You're correct. There's state law that governs towing also. We're allowed to write an ordinance pursuant to the state law. It can have, you know, some consistencies. You have to have some consistencies with the state law. But we can amend our ordinance, but we could not prohibit towing. We can't just prohibit it.
That's what I'm trying to get an answer to, and maybe you can just make it simple for me. If a parking lot owner so chooses to use towing as a means to enforce lack of payment on their property, can the city prohibit that?
No.
No. That's what I thought.
But we cannot prohibit it.
You can what?
We can regulate, like requiring the requiring the size.
Okay, so can you then define, Mr. Perkins is over there, you want to come on up and help Tom? How many other attorneys can we get up here? Come on up, Chris.
Can I throw a question out?
Sure, go ahead, Mr. Mayor.
Let me ask you, I think what we're trying to get at, and I think it's a fair question in terms of unintended consequences, we are modifying 48C. Could we modify 48A so that it was parallel to 48C, so that what we're requiring of the booting, we would require of the towing? In other words, to say it very succinctly, we're requiring receipts, electronic receipts, on the booting now. We have a hole, or a potential hole, if we do that today, of not requiring that for towing. So somebody in theory could tow it. And again, we ended up with the situation with Fair Park where it was a towing issue. Could we make 48C and 48A parallel so that you couldn't tow or boot without an electronic receipt? Is that where you were trying to go?
Well, I was trying to, let them say it without giving them the answer. And it comes to the point that and maybe I'm wrong, but I think there's some regulations in the towing ordinance at the state level that may prohibit us from enacting something when someone has private property and they contract with a wrecker company to have those people towed. And maybe I'm jumping way ahead. Maybe Mr. Anino is right. We won't have a problem. I'm just trying to get today, since we're rushing to make a decision, I'd like to have the information, at least for my own self, to make the proper decision as to whether we're jumping from the fire into the frying pan.
Mr. Nacinski, we'd have to check the interrelationship between state law regulations and what we can do on the local level. I hesitate to answer that question.
Okay. I would suggest that maybe y'all, after this meeting, start checking that out so that at some point, if we do find out that people are returning to their parking where they thought they parked their car and they are not finding their car anymore because it has been towed away because of, alleged lack of payment, and the council is then put in a position to react to that, that we don't waste a lot of time to do our research on that.
We will do that. And I think it's important you do that so that we kind of fill the hole on this, because all of a sudden an unintended consequence is we do push to towing, and I'm really conscious of the Fair Park issues that we dealt with not too long ago. We need to make sure that these are going to be as parallel as they can be, because we clearly don't want to switch from booting to encouraging, quote-unquote, towing, which now you're 6 miles away, you might have damaged the car in towing. We know some of the issues that happened at the impound lots, all those sorts of things. So I think it deserves, regardless of what happens today on 48C, you need to go back on 48A and try to address the questions that Mr. Tinsky has raised.
Yes, we'll do.
A couple of closing comments, Mr. Mayor. My concern with this is not the fact that we need to deal with the problem to make sure that people are welcome when they come downtown and they don't find themselves in these awkward situations. But some of the correspondence that I've seen that relates to the alleged booting of the vehicles for lack of payment or saying that they paid and they didn't, almost all the correspondence that I saw that showed that there was a huge number of people that had literally not paid at all. Then there was a smaller group of people that had maybe paid the day rate in lieu of the nighttime rate. I mean, I think there's some problems out there that need to be dealt with, but I'm not sure that we really ramped up to a point, and this is what really concerns me. We passed an ordinance, we gave the parking lot people and the booting people, call them the industry, a decision, an ordinance, we gave them a timetable, and then here we are coming back, and somewhat, although it's within our rules and regulations, we're somewhat pushing this through by not having it go to committee, not getting it fully vetted, getting some of these answers that we're all asking around the horseshoe today that probably should have been vetted at a committee level or somewhere previous to it coming to the council, and ramping up from 1 week where a memo is getting circulated with signatures to having to act the following week. And I'm a little concerned about that. Not that we
shouldn't do that under some circumstances, but I think it bothers me somewhat that we send a message out there that we've got rules and procedures, but then we're going to pop up here and change them and literally give no notice. This is the way this is written. It will go into effect tomorrow. I'm not saying that there are not problems, and I know Ms. Medrano reminded me that one of the booting companies, the people that are doing the booting wear bulletproof vests and almost look like they're bounty hunters, she said. I guess my concern with that is I understand that they want to protect themselves, but then if they've got a business that is literally positioning themselves to where they need the protection, I'm not sure that that's what we want to be taking place out there on the public streets of the city of Dallas. So with that, I do have some concerns, about this. I think we need to clean it up and get downtown, moving the right way, and booting does send the wrong message. But remember, colleagues, the city goes out and boots after someone doesn't pay a parking ticket three times, and that is something that we've had to do because we've had parking scufflaws at the meters where you clearly know what it is you're paying and that the meter took your money properly. With that, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Roy Coleman, please.
I just want to be clear that this is not prohibiting booting. It is simply requiring that a receipt be given before booting can occur. So it's really not that great of a change. While I understand that the questions that Mr. Natinsky is asking, I think that's a separate issue. I think that we need to deal with this today, and I'll be supporting it.
Thank you. Mr. Cadane, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Tidlow, let me just get this straight. What we're doing on this ordinance, we're changing what we had previously to state that we're going to start the ticketing immediately instead of July 1st.
That's correct.
Isn't that correct? Okay, and receding. Receding is what I meant. Not ticketing, receding. Okay, we had an ordinance back then that everybody came together, we approved it. Now we're coming to do an ordinance now where nobody has heard about it. We haven't discussed it. And I for one, think it needs to stay the same. And I don't think it's going to make any difference. The difference will be on that lot owner. It will give him more time to get his ticketing, his receipting done, which we told him in the beginning he would have it. Now we're telling him, oh, we're taking that away from you. And now we're going to wait and do it right now. So you got to have your machines tomorrow. Is that what we're saying? If we do this today, does that lot have to have their receipts tomorrow in that lot?
If they boot on that lot, yes, sir.
Okay, and then on the towing, they don't have to receive anything, correct? And are we looking to try to see that they all have to have receipts, even in the towing era? If I've got a lot and I do nothing but towing, I don't have to have receipts, correct? I mean, what's changed in there? Nothing. Absolutely nothing, right?
No, sir.
We're not touching towing at all.
No, exactly. So I for one, would like to see it stay like it was, give them till July, and give them till January on the video, because I don't see this going to change anything. We told them that from the beginning. Thank you.
Thank you. There was one representative from Hawkeye Parking Enforcement, Jeff Klunt, that requested to speak. Jeff, would you like to speak? Limit it to 3 minutes, please.
Thank you for your time for me to speak today. My name is Jeff Klein. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the co-owner and operations manager for Hawkeye Parking Enforcement. For the sake of brevity, I have written down a few things I would like to say today to take into consideration. My partner and I took over this business at the beginning of March of last year. Since March of last year, our company has worked diligently with the city to come up with an ordinance that works for all parties involved. The ordinance officially began October 1st, 2009, and since that time, our company has worked extremely hard in an effort to make sure that we are in compliance with the new ordinance at every turn. That being said, I suspect and now know the real reason why we're here today, the main reason that we're here today is due to the number of complaints that the city has received regarding the booting. As always in anything, there are always two sides to every story. Okay? I feel that it's extremely pertinent to point out the fact that 100% of the complaints regarding our company, Hawkeye Parking Enforcement, there have been 58 complaints, 58, that have come through, funneled through to the Public Works and Transportation Department, our newfound regulatory body, and reviewed by us as well. Of those complaints, zero resulted in the fact that Hawkeye Parking Enforcement immobilized a car illegally or wrongfully. Now, that being said, we have given refunds, as Mr. Titlow said, we have given refunds, seven to be exact. Even though we weren't in the wrong, we gave grace due to extenuating circumstances on some of these complaints. But none were found that we booted somebody wrongfully or illegally. Now, I know it's on the table today, and I understand that perceptions can be deceptive. I also understand that electronic meters that give receipts are the wave of the very near future, and I hope that they help this issue. No matter what the outcome is today, however, I've always stated we as a company are willing to work with whatever machine is on the lot, whether it be an honor box with slots or whether it be electronic meters that give receipts. We're not opposed to working with either. What I absolutely do not understand, though, is the reason that why we're even here and that it's brought to today's agenda when electronic meters at this point aren't even required. And just for your knowledge, electronic meters will be ordered for all areas where deemed necessary. These meters will be installed in advance of the July 1st deadline that is in the existing ordinance. The flip side to this all today is that your vote in favor of electronic meters immediately, if that's in favor of that, then the city, I feel, is unfairly putting nine people out of work, my entire company out of work, that follow the rules accordingly and work with the city and always have. As an aside, I also recognize that this week's upcoming NBA All-Star event will attract thousands of people. This event is a wonderful thing for the city, and we have worked very hard with our clients in that they will have the majority of their lots attended where needed. And for the record, booting will be a non-issue from Hawkeye Parking Enforcement this entire weekend. Call it a furlough.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And in all, I'm asking that you forgive me if I seem a little bit nervous, and I am nervous. My anxiety is directly related to the fact that if your decision today is indecision that whether or not myself and eight other employees have a job come tomorrow. Now, that's really that I have, but I do have a couple of points that I wanted to touch on, if I may.
Take about 15 seconds and go through them real quick.
Okay, as far as the 15% of complaints that Ms. Hunter's bringing up, it's not about 15% of the boots that people are complaining about. That 15% is of the complaints that have come in. We've done far more boots than this 100 boots and 15 others have seen one way or the other. Our night guys wear bulletproof vests. That's a fact. When you have a woman shot over on Commerce right next to the Pearl Club randomly, I feel like it's a safety feature that they need. We don't need flying bullets hitting our guys.
Let me ask you one question,
yes,
and it comes out what you said. If this is passed, then do you have any way to put the electronic machines in this time frame?
The time frame that it's currently set now?
No, not July 1st, in the next...
Next day? No, absolutely not. Okay. Where it sits right now, sir, is that the evaluation of where these meters will be appropriate on these lots. We understand what the rule is and where they have to be if where we're going to be booting, okay? But what we're evaluating is the cost of the meters versus... You know, is that a cost-effective method on those lots?
Appreciate it.
Okay.
We appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. McDonald, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And this what we brought up
is basically moving everything from July to immediately. And the machine isn't asked for immediately. It's asked for an attendant or the automatic machine. And let me remind council members, in the Deep Ellum area, they had months to install these machines. And as I said, only one has been installed. I don't even know if it's the one near Baylor Hospital. Mr. Tidlow, of the 15% that were refunded, what percentage of the two companies that boot now, is it evenly that they refunded money, or is it just one booting company of the complaints?
We'll have to provide that split at a later time. We don't have the split at this time. We calculated.
But just by memory, is it, do you think it's more one booting company than the other?
Gary, if you don't know, please don't guess.
That's not appropriate.
We can provide that information later.
Can that be done today?
Yes.
Okay. I also received an email, and I failed to read this a while ago, over in the West End. And a person was arrested because they were stealing money off the little slots in the parking lot. And even after they arrested that gentleman, eight people were still booted after the booting company knew that this man had been arrested for stealing the money out of a parking slot, and the eight people were still booted.
We haven't completed that investigation yet. We haven't received a police report at the time when the actual booting occurred and when the person was arrested, and so we haven't completed that investigation.
I just want to make sure that these colleagues know that things that are happening out in the downtown area, I think it's serious, and I think we need to move forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Allen, please.
The Councilwoman Medrano's last question, those eight that we're talking about, was that an individual that got the money, or was that a pay box? What was the situation on that?
It was an individual.
So it's not a pay box where somebody walked up and broke into the pay box and stuff.
It was an individual posing as an attendant for the parking lot.
It was an individual. Was it a homeless individual?
We're not
sure.
We
don't know for sure. But I just want to make sure, back when we're saying the facts, because I said it over and over again, and I said it three times, and that's why I want to make sure everybody understands. If anybody preys on anybody, I'm against that 1,000% and throw them in jail. But when it comes to the court of public opinion and then saying things that almost like politicians saying things, and I go against that, because if it's true, it's true. If it's false, it's false. So we'll get our facts correct at the end of the day. The mayor said it very well, and I guess why I'm kind of passionate on this, is unintended consequences. Said it so well. I don't think we've thought this thing all the way through about it. It's kind of a knee-jerk reaction. It's easy to sit here and say, well, so-and-so was booted. At the end of the day, it's not a perfect world we live in. It's balance on both sides of the fence. You know, when I was a kid, I got caught with my hand in the cookie jar. And what did I do as a kid? First thing I said, that's not my hand. That's not my hand in that cookie jar. It might look like my hand, but it's not my hand. And once I said that, then I couldn't turn around and change it from after that. I kept saying over and over to my mother, oh, I know, that it looked like my hand, but that's not my hand, because I said that. And a lot of that, I think, is what goes on today. We do this, we get caught with our hand in the cookie jar, we take a chance. But the saddest part about this whole thing is the lack of teamwork that we haven't created here at the city level. When this started back in the Deep Ellum, when this started, I asked for the parking folks to come see me and also the folks from Deep Ellum. And at the end of the day, they both benefit from each other. The folks in Deep Ellum, they have the bars and the cafes down there. Well, they don't have to provide parking. So they rely on the parking folks to do it. They both live off each other. And quite frankly, there wasn't a whole lot. The parking folks, they seemed like they wanted to kind of come to a conclusion. The DeepElling folks, at least the ones that visited with me, they just sat there and kind of, they didn't want to work with any of it. It's all the fault of the other guy. And you kind of have this balance where you work together with teamwork, especially downtown where there isn't parking for these businesses. Now, you go out in the suburbs and you got to pay for those parking spots. But downtown, you don't. You rely on the parking folks. So I've been disappointed in the lack of teamwork that I've seen. And again, the whole issue to me is the unintended consequences. We can sit here and try to just talk about booting at the end of the day, but I just do not feel it was thought out all the way through. And I'm going to say, now this will make the fifth time I said this, because I want to make sure everybody understands that if anybody preys on the innocent, then boy, we're going to throw them in jail. And what we're saying is, y'all have looked at it, and y'all sat here and told this council, you've investigated, and you haven't seen that to be the facts. And the only reason I'm passionate about it, I hate to see, I don't care who they are, man or whatever, that's being painted a certain way, that might not just be true. That might not be true. And that's why I guess I've been kind of passionate about that. And so, anyway, Mayor, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've hesitated commenting on this because, quite honestly, I've not gotten feedback from residents in my district, and this has been a downtown challenge, but I've listened to my colleagues this morning. What's given me pause about this particular ordinance is the swiftness that it made it to the council agenda. I mean, there are so many issues that we have that we bring to the forefront, and this was memoed to the council on Friday, and wham, here it is on Wednesday. Now, I like quick, efficient government. I'm all for that. But in this case, I'm scratching my head saying, have the very people we're about to re-regulate been included in this discussion? And that's what's giving me pause. Have the very people we're about to re-regulate been given an opportunity? So I guess that question is for staff. Have we, or for Mary, or have we notified those parking lot entities that we're about to re-regulate been notified about this council hearing today?
No.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
No.
Okay. Mayor, that gives me pause.
Well, they're notified, they're notified in the sense that it's posted on the council agenda.
Okay.
But no.
All right. Well, I understand.
Let me finish that part of it, because Ms. Pedrano, I asked her to contact people. Could you just answer that question from your perspective?
And
answer it fully for Mr. Newman. Who did you contact, those sorts of questions?
Ms. Hunt and I split the entire list, and we made contact with each parking lot owner.
But the ordinance in front of us today covers the whole city. It says effective immediately, as it says in here, after the posting of this passage and posting of this ordinance, it makes it effective immediately. That's one thing that it caught my attention. And the other thing is citywide. So have we contacted parking lots that this would affect citywide, or is this just for an extension of downtown? Mary? Mayor?
I'm sorry, I'll have to ask the attorneys. I'm not...
And I'm not saying necessarily we should have. It's just begging the question that this was put on the agenda on Friday by memo, which is our procedure.
Yeah, your question's fair. Let's get the answer to it.
I just, colleagues,
the question, this applies citywide.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. So was there an effort to go outside the core downtown as it relates to make sure that these very business entities know we're about to re-regulate them? That's my question. You know, a public hearing process. This afternoon we'll have eight or nine zoning cases, and there's a public hearing process. The mayor can't call the meeting to order. We can't hear public hearings until after 1 o'clock, so forth. There's a rule and procedure. That's what gives me pause about this. I also am in a little bit of a quandary because I'm waiting to hear and see, and I've gotten the same emails, colleagues, about individuals who have gotten booted, but I'm waiting to hear and see our professional staff to say, in these cases, we've had situations where people were booted and shouldn't have been.
Now, I have to take this gentleman up here that owns the booting firm or enforcement firm to his word to say that he of 58 complaints, and he was very clear, he said zero. So I'm trying to measure. I don't know how many other booting companies are out there, Mr. Medrano, Ms. Hunt, but I'm trying to see, are we reacting to something that may not necessarily be have specific merit to it? I just give pause anytime we as a council regulate. I just give pause to it. And then this quickly. Those are my thoughts. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kerwin.
Thank you, Mayor. And there's a procedure of moving things mighty quick, and I think that the rules were pretty much followed. And had it not been that the two council members who represent the district felt that this was something that was essential and needed to move very quickly, and I do too, because I signed that letter to also move it very quick for us as a council to discuss it. No, it does not cover the entire city. When I say it does not cover the entire city, Ms. Medrano and Ms. Hunt, they both can speak for themselves. They did not call everyone in the entire city, but they did call the affected area. And then recalling when we discussed this, primarily it was in reference to the downtown area during that last discussion. Had it been something over the entire district or over the entire city, then of course I would have stepped up, as I said earlier, about the tow trucks. Well, not the tow trucks, but the 18-wheelers that are over-proliferated in the southern sector. And there, as it relates to the entire city, when we're talking about towing and booting, then the concentration should not just be, if we're going to start talking about the entire city, just downtown. I have an 18-wheeler right this minute in the 3,000 block of Marcellus, and there's a couple of 18-wheelers right this minute on Martin Luther King that are just sitting there illegally, and there are some other 18-wheelers out on Buckner and Rottingham that are just sitting there. So if we're going to start talking about the whole city and towing and booting, then let's do that. But now, I just had to go out to that level so you all could understand that I have some situations that are parking nuisance that are not being addressed as we are addressing this. But specifically my concern is the concern that we have as related to downtown. My general focus, even though it does affect the entire city, is the focus on downtown. The focus has been revitalizing downtown, trying to re-energize downtown, trying to bring people downtown, trying to get a festive downtown, and I do not want to see folks preyed upon. Now, with that being said, let me say this. To the towing companies, and let me be real clear, the only way a towing company can prey upon a car downtown that's illegally parked maybe is that they have to know that on this parking lot they have to be able to know what's in that lockbox. They cannot just be going around and looking for a car and say, oh, we're going to get it. They don't know what's in the parking lot. So the only way that the car can be towed off the parking lot is that the person who owns that parking lot or has given the key to an individual that has access to that is the person that has to call the tow company. Am I correct? The tow company has a sign up there. The box is locked. Nobody knows what's in it. Tow company just can't come by and say, oh, look, there's a car. They have to go in and verify what's in that box. And then at that point, the owner or someone has to call the tow company. I guess I'm kind of right, unless they got osmosis to know what's in and what's not in that box. I'm waiting.
They have the tow truck has a contract with the property owner in advance.
Okay.
So only those towing companies that have a contract can tow on that particular lot.
A contract to tow.
Correct.
Okay, but now how does he know? Of course, he has a contract to tow.
Now,
With the property owner.
With the property owner. But how does he know what in which car to sell?
Barry or Mr. Hawkeye?
If someone can help. Barry, Nino, someone. Whoever can help.
The way that it works, a parking company owner or management parking company, they hire a company like us. We're not just a booting company. We're also considered an auditing company. So
okay.
Yes, is the answer to your question. We are provided a set of keys.
So you also have the key.
We have the key to check the meters.
Okay.
Yes.
So Hawkeye has a key to the parking lot.
Yes.
Lock boxes.
To the lock boxes.
So
it's the upper portion of it.
Yeah. And it so states whatever the dispute is, and it goes back to you, Mr. Atkins, whatever the dispute is, and Mr. Atkins was saying that there's no referee at that particular point, but you and the owner have an agreement. You have the key to the owner's lock box.
Yes,
so the person in dispute comes out and say, hey, look, I paid. And that's their two words. You all were against one another. And I understand exactly what it does. And you also mentioned the fact that you're going to do a boot-free weekend. All right, so and I can appreciate that. The problem is, and we must solve it, you have to have these machines, and you've agreed to have them. The problem is that the council members have expressed their major concern, and we do need to get to the table and bring this to some type of immediate resolve. And the only way that it appears that we're moving in that direction, since they are the ones that are receiving the complaints and don't want to see nobody out of jobs. However, we have a problem. And we have a problem that's bestowed upon us by way of the parking lot attendant and your company and the complaints coming here to the city in which we regulate. And the reason that we're moving in this direction now is because it's a problem that landed in our laps, and we're not the ones making the money off of it.
Right.
So have that understanding. But I'm with trying to figure out how we can expeditiously find some kind of way to keep your company sustainable and in motion. But at the same token, we got to adhere to what the citizens are saying.
Correct.
And that's where I just wanted to have a little verification of
that's
how
correct.
Towing would happen.
Correct.
And the only way a car can be towed is that once that box is open, in which you're opening it up anyway.
Correct. There would be an auditor that would verify the funds that are inside of the meter. Correct.
Are there pictures taken of the whole box?
We video. We don't take a snapshot Polaroid picture of what money's in there. We video the space.
And Mayor, I'm wrapping it up now. The lighted, one of the colleagues mentioned about lights. It was not a lot of lighting.
Each lot, depending upon the area of the signage, we have 4-foot meter signs on top of every box. 4-foot is a pretty significant sign. Regarding the lighting, there are certain lots that are darker than others. They try in every turn to get proper lighting on these lots. Not all lots have night business, but yes, they do have lighting on them.
And to Mr. Tenille Atkins' concern, across the street at the Black Academy.
Yes, sir.
When the seven cars
were Seven
closed.
Cars were immobilized that night.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And
all for non-payment of parking.
All right. And
16 cars were on the lot. The remaining 9 vehicles that parked paid the day anywhere from 25 cents up to the daily rate of 125. We did give those people grace. We didn't touch their car. There's a vast difference between partial payment and a bunch of people not paying.
But
we felt as though we immobilized those cars accordingly and rightfully.
And I'm not going to get into a debate, but was it $1.25 in some of those?
Yes, in a handful of them. And
in a handful of them that were told there was $1.25.
They did not get booted.
But did they first get booted?
No.
Okay. Anyway. All right, but the proper signage needs to go out as well so that, folks can see and picture
and
agreements as we move forward. Big signs, and maybe that'll help as we try to
solve
this.
Part of the process, sir, if I may, whenever a complaint goes to Department of Public Works and Transportation, an inspector goes on every single complaint and reviews the lot. And what they're looking for is the signage posted clearly. Are the numbers painted on the spaces correctly? Is there a sign posted
or signs posted regarding boots and the fine thereof booting. Okay? At that point, I receive a lovely visit from the inspector, and they come in and show me the complaint. We sit down, they check my documentation, which would include our handwritten documentation, our meter sheets from that lot that day, and our video evidence of when we immobilized that vehicle. Okay?
And as we move forward, and thank you so very much, as we move forward and as I close, to the colleagues and Mayor, I'm still going to be pushing, Mayor, as we move toward the budget, to do it all the parking meters downtown, and to figure out how we can get that revenue through an advertisement or something through some corporate to make up for the lost revenue. I want to look into that. I also will be looking into valet parking because we have some valet parkers that take advantage of the parking lot because where people don't have parking spaces is because valet parkers will go out and put those cones in there. And they'll take up an excessive amount of the parking lot, which leaves limited parking for patrons to come in and park on the parking lot, thus forcing them to come out into the streets and everywhere else. So between valet parking and those parking meters. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Mayor. Ms. Cooper.
Gentleman from Hawkeye, come down one more time. I'd like to ask you, how many boots do you put on lots just approximately, or maybe don't even have lots, that have electronic boxes or an attendant there?
Currently, we enforce 50 lots downtown. We audit 50 lots. At this point, not one of them has an electronic meter on them.
Does anyone have a booting contract on a lot that has an electronic box?
Yes. Does anybody have a contract with us, is what you're asking?
No, maybe I misunderstood what you're saying. Okay, on the lots that have the receipts, okay,
yes.
You don't boot on those.
Our client currently on the lots that we enforce do not have electronic
right.
meters that give receipts.
Do you know of anybody that does? Because there's one more company.
There's one more company, booting company, that's Premier Parking Enforcement, and they enforce Labs Parking Lots and Central Parking System. And to my knowledge, they have a handful of meters out on certain lots, maybe five to ten. I'm not familiar with their lots, though.
Would it be safe to say that your business model doesn't work if there's an electronic pay system or an attendant?
The business, when an electronic meter is come in, a business is still sustainable. It's just a different means of auditing. I'm not sure that I'm following your
okay.
question.
No, that does answer my question because that's what the person said that did it down in Houston. That it's still.
No, they're struggling in Houston. They're struggling in Houston.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much. When we studied this at the committee, actually, I was one that wanted to not start the booting unless we had already in place the electronic pay systems and also or an attendant. I think he's correct. I don't think the business model particularly works if you have those two types of systems in place, because those systems require a little bit more thought process, I think, on the patron that's coming downtown, and they have to think about they get their ticket out, they have to think about what do I do with it now and that kind of thing, and some education process. As a matter of fact, I did have an elderly gentleman call me to tell me that he had gotten a ticket out of an electronic box. He accidentally had turned it upside down and had gotten a ticket, not a boot, but had gotten a ticket, and we traced it back. Star Parking was kind enough to trace it back for me, and indeed the guy had paid. I think irrespective of what happens here today, we really need to go to wherever is possible, this electronic ticketing system, just like they have in Vancouver, or a paid attendant there. And that was my original thought when it was brought to the especially downtown. Now, on the peripheries, we did, as a matter of fact, at the committee meeting, I asked if they would go back and check to make sure all the lots were properly striped and code went out, because I had a problem determining what number of parking space was which on a lot that's just south of the horseshoe parking, south of City Hall. And they did, the staff did go back out and required restriping, repainting, so on and so forth, of some of those lots, because that's a code enforcement issue. And in the future, my preference is going to be to try to move the downtown lot to having one of those two systems. I think it's a cleaner system. I think there's less confusion. I don't like the idea of putting the stuffing. I do not like the idea of people carrying cash on them, having to stuff it in a little bitty tiny slot, you know, where it's very difficult. If they don't have the cash, running in, trying to come back out, then stuffing it in there, I think it's just an unprofessional way to do business downtown. I have talked to several of the parking lot owners downtown. They tell me sometimes that model doesn't work, but over a horizon of you know, 5 years and amortization of the particular type of ticketing machine, I think that it would work. So I am saying right now that the committee will be looking at that in the future, that those of you that own parking lots downtown, because I don't think it's a safe system where you're trying, when you've got cash out in your hand, trying to put it into a little lock, a little slot in the middle of the night. I think it's a bad situation for downtown. I'm sorry that the Hawkeye booting, this is his business model. I don't think it's sustainable, quite frankly. I'm sorry about that. I think that this is an issue. It's an issue because there are not machines and there are not people taking the tickets. I didn't like it to begin with. I'm going to be voting with the maker of the motions today, but in hindsight, I guess we probably could have done a better job of really reviewing this and foreseeing what happened. Well, we did bring in the people from Houston to talk to us, and at that time he assured us it was a great model. Interesting to find out that now it's not. Thanks.
Mr. Hitson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a quick question. And Ms. Koop is right. I think at some point we do need to move all parking, whether it is booting involved or non-booting involved, toward an electronic type of payment system. Can I get one, bring you down here one last time? I just want to confirm something here. Since you made a comment about that you're both in the auditing part of the business, which I guess sets you up to then be in the booting part of the enforcement part of the business. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There's, if this passes today, there's two things that are going to be left to be done. The lot either has to have an electronic mechanism by which the customer gets a receipt, or there needs to be a human attendant on duty on the lot.
If we're going to be booting, correct.
If you're going to be booting,
correct. Okay.
Since you were in the auditing business, is it feasible for you, as Ms. Koop said, you may have a business model that effective tomorrow is not going to be viable, but have you thought about the fact that you may want to go to the parking lot and install the electronic meters and or pay to have an attendant be there so that the booting can take place, or by having those two, it would seem to me, and I'm not in your business, it would seem to me that if I pull up on a lot and there's an attendant there, no matter who pays for them, I'm going to pay. So consequently, there's no unpaid parking. Consequently, there's no need for booting. Have I analyzed that right?
Mostly.
What have I missed?
As far as the electronic meters, yes, we are and have been since last October, clearly been working with the client in a way to get these electronic meters ordered. Okay, they take time. Turnaround time to get them here delivered and installed is typically 8 weeks. But we're also evaluating, in the meantime, which lots will these be productive for. You know, we can't justify putting an $8,000 to $12,000 machine on every single lot. It's just not justifiable. So we're looking at that and trying to evaluate how many machines are we talking here. Are we talking 20, 30, all 50 of the lots that we look over? Not all 50 of the lots are problem areas. Problem areas, what we've found, are deep elm. In fact, since the booting has gone down, the revenue to parking companies has gone down 20% since we stopped booting. I don't see how that's fair to the parking company. Mm-hmm. Booting is working.
Okay. Well, you know, I do feel somewhat uncomfortable with the fact that this council passed an ordinance in this last fall, set a timetable up there. I would hope that you and your clients are diligently moving toward, you know, implementing where appropriate either attendance or electronic devices. And the fact that we're going to vote on this today and put it into effect, you know, tomorrow does bother me, because as you said, there's, you know, there can be seven people out of work, and this is not a good economic time for that
you know, that to be happening.
And where we are on that, sorry to interrupt you, but where
well,
we are.
I didn't ask a question. I'm sorry. Okay. So with that, Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Allen, Mr. Salazar, then we vote.
Again, I'm going to be voting against this, and I just want it real clear again. The reason is that in the fall, we said what we were going to do. The businesses went by what we said, started their business model. It's several hundred thousand dollars to put the machines in. Started the business model to go through there based on what we told them we were going to do. And then all of a sudden, a week comes up, and then we're saying, no, we changed our minds. We're not going to do that. And so I have a problem with that. Also, then, when I contact our staff that works with these folks on a daily basis, and they're telling me that, again, it's not predatory, that these folks are doing what they're doing it legally and correctly. So I just have a problem with that, knowing that July 1st it will be required, because that's originally what we told them, and that's why I'm going to vote against this ordinance. Is we told them one thing, and all of a sudden now we're changing our minds, and we're going to put X number of people out of work. As far as the procedures in place, we've heard all about it, and those procedures we talked about it. And we talked about them during that very first fall meeting. Hawkeye does not have control of that cash. You cannot get into the cash. You have no control of that. There's plexiglass. There's no way they can get in. That's verified by the staff. So the thing can imply that they manipulate it is wrong. And it shows it's just wrong to do that. Anyway, Mayor, I'm going to... That's the reason. Number one, we said we were going to do something, and now... knee-jerk reaction, we changed our minds. Staff is contradictory of what's been said, so I'm going to continue going with what we voted on in the fall.
Mr. Salazar.
Final question.
The question's been called second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. This is to call the question only. Favor signify by saying aye.
No.
It passes. That motion passes. Now we'll go to the question in front, which is the approval of addendum item number 3. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Roll call vote. It's record vote. On the motion.
Mr. Natinsky? Okay. Ms. Coop is out of the room. All in favor of the motion, Mayor Leppard. Mayor Pro Tem Carraway, Council Members Salazar, Atkins, Hill, Davis, Hassel, Margolin, and Hunt. Voting no, Council Members Cadane, Newman, Natinsky, Allen. Motion passes, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Medrano shows not voting. Council Member Coop. Okay,
the
record should reflect
the record will be modified to show.
Yes, so Council Deputy Mayor
Pro Tem. Ms. Coop is out of the room. That closes the vote down. Mr. Perkins, I would ask you, as was raised in earlier, to pull 48A, and review that, and then I'd also ask that to be a briefing in context with the Transportation Committee with Ms. Coop. We're done. Our next item is item number 5. I'll have to have a motion for reconsideration. I have to have a motion for somebody. There's been a motion to reconsider. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary will again vote.
Another record vote, Mr. Mayor.
Record vote.
Yes, sir. Okay, Mr. Mayor, I'll have voted on the motion. Mayor Leppard voting in favor, Mayor Pro Tem Carraway, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, Council Members Coop, Salazar, Hill, Davis, Hassel, Margolin, and Hunt voting no, Council Members Cadane, Newman, and Natinsky, and Allen. Motion passes, Mr. Mayor.
Madam Secretary, addendum item number 5, please.
Addendum item number 5 is an increase in the contract with Azteca Enterprises Incorporated for revisions to the structural steel at the entrance canopy, design changes for the exterior walls, additional drilling and casing of piers, and modifications to the lighting and rainwater harvesting system at Maddie Nash Myrtle Davis Recreation Center located 3710 North Hampton.
Ms. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't know if this is for Mr. Cook or Mr. Dyer. Either one or both. I had Coop on the mind. That's a good thing. Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
My concern here absolutely does not go to the integrity and the quality of what we're doing in reinvesting over $4 million in this recreation center for West Dallas residents. That's beside the point. My concern goes to some of the process and the fact that in reviewing this, there are three administrative actions, amazingly enough, right under $25,000, and then now we have a change order request in front of us today for $125,000 plus or minus dollars. In my emails to you, I conveyed a concern about what's the limitations of administrative actions, $25,000, sequential like this, all within a period of 4 months. What are the rules involved in this and that sort of thing?
The rules are that management can do a change order such as this with a $25,000 limit and subject to a 25% cap of the original contract as well.
25%. So the change order, the AAs can amount to no more than 25% of the original council approved?
Correct. But it would certainly not be allowed to split up change items into smaller chunks such that they fall below $25,000 each. And the item on today's agenda is good evidence of that. The previous changes were, as Mr. Dyer can explain better than I can, were three separately identified, three different time frames that each caused a change order, and they happened to be $24,000, $24,000, and $21,000. Today,
ironically, all under 25.
Well, but they were very clear and separate items, and today's item is evidence that there aren't shenanigans, I think.
I didn't imply that.
I understand. But because this one does exceed the $25,000 limit set by city code, this does need council authorization to proceed.
Mr. Dyer, you and I started having a conversation in the conference room in the back regarding this project and so forth. There's high anxiety within the community to get this project done. Ms. Nash, Councilwoman Nass, passed away a little while ago and so forth. It's too bad she's not going to be with us when we do the ribbon cutting and so forth. And so I appreciate the sense of urgency on staff and so forth. You understand my concern about seeing sequential right under 25,000 AA.
Absolutely.
Okay. Sitting here today, do you think we're going to have any other change orders at this stage of the game? Or?
I do. There are already some in the pipeline, yes.
For administrative action or for council review?
At this point, the architect and the contractor are processing a few additional changes. This is a reconstruction project.
Yep.
We salvaged the gymnasium and turned that into the recreation portion of the building. So in a reconstruction, you encounter a lot more unforeseen. And as you go forward, when you tear a wall out, you find something requires a fix. And so at that point, you move in, you process a change order. 15 or 20 days later, something else comes up. So you process them. But if one item comes up that exceeds that $25,000 limit, then you've got to stop and bring it to the council.
Okay. Move approval, Mayor.
Second.
Move to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, 44, please.
What's that? 43?
44.
44.
The Board of Commissioners.
Oh. 44 is consideration of appointments to Board of Commissions and the evaluation of duties of Board of Commission members. You have a few nominees for appointment, Mr. Mayor and Council. You have Cultural Affairs Commission, Sabrina Wickball being nominated by Councilmember Davis, meeting the requirements of a professional performance artist on that board. The Police and Fire Pension Board, Jesse Cadane is being nominated to serve on behalf of the council by Mayor Leppard. And Reinvestment Zone 9 Board, Vickery Meadows, Kevin Felders is being nominated by Councilmember Davis. All meet qualifications for service, Mr. Mayor.
Motion, please.
Move approval.
It's been moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, 45, please.
Item 45, Mr. Mayor, is authorized acquisition of two parcels improved with occupied residential structures located at 2414 and 2420 Hooper Street for the proposed Bear Street redevelopment project, which is being implemented as part of the neighborhood investment program. Was there 2 seconds required on that one, Mr. Mayor?
There is not.
There is not 2 seconds required on that. Any 2 seconds?
45. 45 does require. Okay. Motion. Second. It's been moved by Ms. Davis. 1 second, Mr. Askin. Second, Mr. Scalazar. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, 46, please.
Authorize the reconstruction on site of 5 homes in accordance with the Reconstruction Share Program Statement requirements for properties located at 1205 Lawton Drive in the amount of $93,400, 3317 Fordham Road in the amount of $93,400, 1502 South Beckley Avenue in the amount of $93,400, and 2006 Idaho Avenue in the amount of $93,400, and 2919 Jerome Street in the amount of $93,400.
Second. It's been moved and seconded by both Ms. Medrano and Mr. Atkins. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, addendum item 7, please.
Addendum item seven, authorize a special economic development loan agreement and 2 commercial loan agreements to enhance the quality of life for the residents in the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund target area to provide funding as follows. Number one, Richard Knight doing business as the MLK 175 Gateway Project in an amount not to exceed $92,800. And 2, Freedom Fashions in an amount not to exceed $50,000. And 3, Pneumonia Services, LLC, in an amount not to exceed $50,000.
Ms. Newman, do you want to begin?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. My question went to, we're on addendum 7, correct?
Correct.
1 second. Carl, please. Mr. Zabakowski, I'm sorry. Good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning.
First of all, this is an action for the council to consider. They're all loans, correct?
That's correct.
Somewhere in the write-up here, reference grants. Yes, on the background, the end of the background, it says the grants were recommended for approval. That's just got to be a typo.
These are loans.
These are loans, because the write-up says the grants were recommended for approval by the South Dallas Fair Park Advisory on December 8th.
That's an error.
Okay, they're all loans. Okay. My concern goes to collateral. My concern goes to loan-to-value. Are each one of these sufficiently collateralized?
In our opinion, they are, and in the opinion of the advisory board, they are.
Okay. And the terms of the loans, are each of these 5-year loans?
Yes, they are.
And is that typical of others that have come through 5-year loans? Is that the prototype is 5-year loans?
That's the way we have recast it. You'll recall that we stopped lending practices for a year or two to get lending standards in place and get the advisory board in place, and that's pretty standard.
Okay, so on a going forward basis, it's 5-year, no more than 5-year terms.
There is.
Good morning, Ms. McKinney. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? There is a loan that we make for special economic development projects that have flexible terms, and if the advisory board deems so, the term can be longer.
Okay. But there can be exceptions to that, but generally we're talking 5-year deals. Okay.
Typically.
Okay. And the interest rate on these?
3%.
3%. Okay. All right. Thank you. That information wasn't in here, and I hadn't had a chance to get the staff ahead of time. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Mrs. Margolin, please.
Thank you. I spoke with my appointee to the Dallas, South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund Board, and he's very comfortable with these. He's got a master's degree in accounting. I'm very happy with that. But he did mention that there were some very specific conditions on the various loans, collateral, et cetera. And so I wanted to make sure that as we're approving them with those conditions.
Absolutely. In our most recent audits, we have kind of pointed out how we make loans through our policies and procedures, and we actually have collateral advance ratios, and I think in some of the fact sheet information, we have actually listed the loan-to-value as well as the collateral coverage ratio so that we know exactly what our equity position is in the collateral that we have.
And all the documentation of collateral, et cetera.
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, I would like to thank Carl and Lisa Kenny for all the time they put into the Fir Park Trust Fund that's in District 7. What makes this trust fund so unique, because you cannot go into just a Bank of America or a Chase and get this type of loan each and every day in that community. So this is a unique project. And the good thing about this is from ticket sales for individuals who come to the State Fair of Texas. Am I correct?
Starplex.
It's for Starplex for the most part, which is in the same area as the fair. But the other thing, have we kind of expanded that from Starplex? Or is it just money from Starplex?
There are several sources of revenue for the trust fund. Starplex ticket sales is one, antique sales, the flea market,
okay.
Convention and Visitors Bureau. So
okay.
There are several.
So it's just not Starplex alone.
That is correct.
And Ms. McKinnon, these loans that most of the individuals get come from the businesses within that district. Am I correct?
They go to the businesses within that district. You actually have to live in the defined footprint, or the business has to be located, in the defined footprint, or you're not eligible for a loan from the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund.
Do you think that some of these businesses could go into a traditional bank and get the type of loans that we're giving them right now?
Typically not.
Okay. And that's the beauty of this, project.
There is one other thing. The other side of it is that in an effort to encourage development, I think one of the loans is to redo a building that we would consider to be kind of a blighted building.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to encourage people to invest in those kinds of properties, the 3% interest rate is attractive. You cannot get the dollar per square foot in South Dallas Fair Park that you would get someplace else if you invested your dollar. So an encouragement to people to invest their dollars is the 3% interest.
Right, because we have some other loans that perhaps we'll be looking at in the near future that are very good businesses in that community. They just need a little push to help them with some outside facade improvement and perhaps some other small maintenance within their business. I just want to thank you. I think these three loans are very good loans, and I think they would do extremely well in the South Dallas Fair Park area. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Fiske.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, you know, colleagues, I think this is somewhat the start of a new day, the dawn of a new day for the trust fund. There have been, problems in the past. They've been difficult to work through. I think that Ms. McKinney and her staff did a good job to revamp, set new criteria in place, and these are the first of three loans that are coming through under that new criteria. I think they've been well vetted. They were recommended for approval by I believe unanimously from the Economic Development Committee, so I'll certainly be supporting this, and I would certainly encourage Ms. McKinney to keep everybody towing a straight line down there, and let's get them paid back under terms, no extensions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. You know, I support this. This is a good project. And the first part, you know, the trust fund, I believe that when you try to rebuild a community around the first part, you have to go out of your way to make sure that you have resources to build a project. And some of the small businesses there, they do need their help. I remember the time back in the early 60s and 70s, you know, you could walk, eat, drink, and entertain right there at the first part on MLK. And now they need all the tools in the toolbox. But one thing, colleagues, Jerry and Ron, as a banker, you tell me how many times you go in the bank and you ask for the personal guarantee, Mayor. These loans are personal guarantee. So that showed that they are going to pay the loan back because they personal guarantee those loans. Is that correct, Lee?
That's correct.
So how long has it been in place that they had a personal guarantee these loans?
I believe the original firms had personal guarantees. I believe they've always had to do that. The business
right.
owner has to.
And I think, Murray, you know, when you personal guarantee a loan, you try to make sure you're going to pay it back. In today's time, it ain't too many people do personal guarantees or loans. I'm trying to make sure y'all are aware of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kerwin, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And Ms. Davis, respectfully, if the trust fund is in your area, and I just kind of want to say just a few things about it, and because I'm more familiar with it, not than you, Ms. Davis, I meant to you, I'm saying just in general. First of all, you know, when we get to talk about sticking with the criteria, we really need to, and I'll be asking Ms. Davis if you would, let's begin to bring this back to the table for a review. I would only respectfully ask that because the original intent of the trust fund was never for a loan. And I want folks to really understand that it was never intended to be a loan. It was for raising the bootstraps for the small businesses in and around the Fair Park, generally called and from the Starplex. When that deal was first put on the table back in 1986-87 and finally came to fruition in 91, the original intent was to be able to help small businesses with small grants that had small ideas and that could not go into a bank and get the type of support for that business. A general example, let's look at Meshack's Barbecue on, and Ms. Davis, I know this is in your district, so allow me. Let's look at Meshack's Barbecue and Malcolm X at Pennsylvania. Had that area had an opportunity to receive a small grant who could not get a loan, then they would have been able to put the roof by the barbecue pit, do the necessary things they need to do as a small, tiny business that would probably still have some economic impact right now today. The same on Martin Luther King. When it was a grant, as this was originally, and I'll ask for us to go back and get the original intent of this purpose. And we've steered away from the original intent and have gone to a loan. Others, well, loan and grant, whatever it is. But here's the deal. The small businesses that only need $5,000 to maybe buy some additional machinery or a fry later or something, they are not a part of this now. They can't apply granted. But when we steered away from the grant, Mayor, we went to a loan, and that was not the original intent. Now, the reason I'm talking about it is because I was the chair of the trust fund. And at that particular point, we gave out $10,000 grants. And we gave out 53 $10,000 grants to small businesses who does not have a business plan and all of these different things. And some of those very businesses today are still in business. One, the car wash at Martin Luther King at Lamar. That car wash started business with only $10,000. Mr. Blues started with only $10,000. The Delta Sigma Theta house on Martin Luther King, the reason that house is there is because they received that $10,000 grant. And we could go on and on and on with still businesses that were funded. And my only concern is this. Yes, we're going to fund this, and I'm going to be voting for it. But now we're giving out a loan. But with this, we've had nothing but problems, and we've had administrative costs stacked on top of it, because when you do the loans, then you're going to have tracking, you've got to have staff, we've got to have offices and all of that. What we had was an entity and a board, as we still have now, that governed, but it was only intended because the money that comes from Starplex was the only money that we were putting back into this pot of money on an annual basis. Had it only been $50,000, then to that community, only $50,000 would have been made available for grants. If it were $500,000, that was what was made available back to the community. I say this out of passion because the politics enters when we put in the loans, and the cost of managing and administrative shot into it when we went to the loans, because we have to go and make sure that all these things and criteria are met. But the little bitty people, those with the cleaners, those that just need a roof put on their cleaners, as backup cleaners, he received a $10,000 grant. He put a cleaners, but the cleaners was leaking. That's all he needed. Smith Ecotropis only needed the $7,000 from the trust fund to buy the material or the machine so that he could compete for a competitive engraving business. He got that, and he did a tremendous service. But once we, you know, and I know I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but that's okay. So let's deal with this ramble, because I want you to know I'm fighting for the little bitty people. Because the little bitty people is who this money was originally intended for. And when we look at the trust, like Samuel Farms Trust and the other trusts and all these other people, we protect those intentions. The original intent for the South Dallas Fairport Trust, the original intent was to do grants to the immediate community around that Fair Park area, and not big businesses, and give them loans and $90-some thousand and let the little bitty people still stay out of business. I'm protecting the beauty shops, the barber shops, and all of the other little print businesses and any little entities that ought to be able to have access to this money.
Mr. Salazar, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with what Mr. Notinsky said regarding the function to make sure that the integrity of the fund is solid and that we have, you know, good practices. I also agree with Mr. Carraway that the original intent of the fund was one thing, and then it turned into a loan. There's no denying the need in the community for these funds and for the funds to continue. But I believe what we haven't done is the next logical step, and I would ask the Chair of the Finance and Budget to look at not only this area, which is Fair Park, but look at other areas like West Dallas and other areas, for example, Lancaster Keys, and gauge the number of loans being given out in these areas and do a report on that. And then when they come to you and they ask, you know, we want to do this or that, you ask the bank, well, why aren't you loaning money in these areas? You know, that's the next logical step. It's great that we can do $500,000, but we're doing the job somebody else should be doing. We're making small interest loans that a bank should be doing, or the bank plus somebody, you know, some agency. We just bailed out the banks. They owe this community something back. Every bank that took money in the bailout needs to participate in South Dallas. Every bank that took money in the bailout needs to participate in West Dallas or East Dallas or even Northwest Dallas, where you have these areas as well. And if there's not a bank that'll do it, maybe we need to help somebody create a bank that'll do it and do more than just $500,000. That's a drop in the bucket. So I'm going to be supporting Ms. Davis on her motion to support this item, but I encourage our chairman, and I think he's doing a good job in finance, to look at this as maybe an opportunity to find a solution for these issues that we have throughout the city of banks not wanting to loan money, not right now in the recession, but even before recession, to people in communities that are in distress who otherwise would qualify. We got a city manager getting money on this fund, a former city manager who's more than qualified, and he's done a lot of good things who's working on this fund, and I congratulate that he's taken the opportunity to do this in this area. And we need more people like Mr. Knight to come forward and actually work these areas to bring them up as well. Thank you.
Ms. Hill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Salazar, I could not agree with you more about the attempt to expand the reach of this kind of methodology and saying to the banks, even in these economic hard times, we want money loaned in our communities. Thank you for saying that, Mr. Salazar, and know that I absolutely and totally agree with you and hope that from our bully pulpit we are heard. That's the first thing. The second thing I wanted to say is, Ms. Lee McKinney, with your extensive banking background and expertise, the City of Dallas is most fortunate to have you on staff. You could have gone anywhere when you left that fine bank that you worked for, where I first met you. I'm glad that you're here. I am very glad that you have stayed with this project. But for your tenacity, your courage, your insistence, I do not believe we would be here today. I'm sure that Ms. Davis feels the same way, and I want to publicly affirm what you have done and express my thanks to you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Davis, and then we'll go ahead and vote.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. I just want to say this about the Fairport Trust Fund. That trust fund is many things in that community. It's just not for the business side. It's for the homeowners association also. For those homeowners association who want to participate in their neighborhood, they can also get trust fund money through a grant to do street toppers, community projects, community outreach, and with all things, it requires some paperwork. I think with the business owners, I've asked Ms. McKinney, let's start meeting, setting up some meetings every 3 months to start meeting with those business owners who have received a grant slash or a loan from the trust fund so we can start talking about educating them, moving them to the next level, making sure that they are positioned right to go further with their business and to perhaps go to an SBDC or go to the Small Business Administration. There are micro-lending that's out there to help them with some other money for their business. And I hear Mr. Carraway, the trust fund used to serve as that, a grant for that neighborhood. And I think long-term we should start talking about that, looking at some of those small businesses perhaps who are having a hard time, starting them off with something perhaps small, perhaps, and giving them a outside facade improvement. I don't know, but those are things that we can talk about. But clearly this trust fund has cleaned itself up. Before I got on the council, there were some issues with the trust fund when it came to checks and balance. And I'll say that, the checks and balance of this trust fund. So I'm now glad to know that it's now on a narrow straight. And when you're dealing with money, it has to also weigh out at the end of the day with checks and balance. And so I just want to thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll take a motion in just a moment, but this reflects the two earlier items, too, by making second the motion. The council members represent that they have undertaken sufficient examination and involvement beyond reviewing the agenda materials to be knowledgeable of both the facts and circumstances of the case to be able to develop an opinion based on such an examination of various factors and issues that are involved. With that, a motion, Ms. Davis, and second.
Second.
A second by Mr. Atkins and Mr. Salazar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. I would like to introduce a special group that's with us. Mr. Intinsky and I had a chance to visit with them a couple of months ago in a location that was very different from City Hall in Dallas, and that was in China. It is an interesting company focusing on wind power, a renewable source. Clearly some technologies that are going to spread across the world in the next several years. And interestingly, too, a partnership between a firm based in China and a firm locally here in Dallas. It was a fascinating conversation and a chance to visit in their facility. And I'd like to introduce
the representatives from the companies that are involved. First, from the China Guangdong Nuclear Wind Power Company, the delegation is led by Mr. Su Chen, who is the chairman and the general manager of the China Guangdong Nuclear Wind Power Company. Sir, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you very much. Other members of his delegation, Mr. Heng Lam, Ms. Lei Luyu, Mr. Shandong Yang, Mr. Liu Wenlin, and Mr. Yun Yun Yu. Could you all please stand? We thank you very much for being with us. A local entity based here, led by Patrick Jennemin, who is the CEO and president. Patrick, thanks for being with us. It was a pleasure to see you in China, too. You were part of the delegation. We thank you very much. And then joining Patrick is Kate Harris and Xilu Yuang. Julie, thank you very much. And then finally, from the Gallup Power Company, Mr. Stephen Wiley, who is the president. Stephen? And Mr. Matt Mooney, who is the director of development. We appreciate all of you being with us. As I indicated, we are hopeful of having investment from the company and from the partnership here locally. It is clearly the type of investment we would like to see worldwide, but also locally here. Mr. Nitinsky, would you like to add any comments from our conversation and visit earlier?
I sure would, Mr. Mayor, and thank you very much. We're certainly glad to have you here at City Council in Dallas, Texas. I know that, Patrick, you've put a lot of work into this. Fortunately, you all don't have to wear your overcoats in the City Hall like we had to wear our overcoats in the factory where the wind blades were being made. Colleagues, unfortunately, we should have probably thought about bringing the pictures from visiting that factory. But I think those wind blades, and you might correct me, I think they're about from here to the back of the room, each one of them. They don't look so big when they're up there spinning out on the units, but they're very big when you're standing there. It's a very unique technological process by which they manufacture those, and we have the opportunity of not only having them visit Dallas today, and I think you're going to partake in some of our NVA activities this evening, hopefully. You know, we want you to ask us any questions while you're here. Let us help you. We certainly hope that we have the opportunity of having that facility built right here in Dallas, Texas. And I know the mayor and the rest of the council will do everything that they can to see to make that happen. So we hope you enjoy your stay, and we look forward to visiting you back in China on our next trip. Thank you very much.
Again, it's a pleasure to have you with us here in Dallas. And again, we hope that the partnership that you have, as well as the relationships here that you have in the local economy, the local market here in Dallas, are going to be fruitful and beneficial for everyone. So again, we appreciate you being here. Before we close for the morning, I'd like to take just a moment to ask for a moment of silence to recognize an individual who, to be truthful with you, is not a name that is very much recognized, but someone who contributed an awful lot to our city and on top of that made some inroads that aren't particularly appreciated, and that's Lillian Bradshaw. She passed away just recently. She headed our library system from 1962 to 1984 for 22 years, and she was the first woman that headed a major library system anywhere in the nation. She was responsible for opening the Eric Johnson Library across the street, and as much as that contributes to our entire community, there is a chair that is named for her as of 1986 from Texas Woman University in Denton, and she made enormous contributions to this community. After she left, she was an assistant city manager and worked as a liaison on some special projects, and really a special person. She passed away just recently at the age of 95. As we close, if we could all rise for a moment of silence, and then we'll go on to adjournment. Thank you very much. We'll adjourn. We'll recess and then reconvene at 1 o'clock. Thank you. Let's begin our session for this afternoon. Madam Secretary, if you would read in the record 47, 48, and 49 are on consent agenda.
Yes, sir. 47, Mr. Mayor, requires a three-quarters vote. You want it considered with...
47 requires a three-quarter vote. You still want to
get
better.
Yeah, 47, 49, I'll take a vote.
Okay, 47, 48, and 49.
Yeah.
Item 47 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding an application for and an ordinance granting a specific use permit for a tower antenna for cellular communication on property zoned a community retail district north of LBJ Freeway, west of Abrams Road. Item 48 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding an application for and an ordinance granting an amendment to specific use permit number 1371 for an open enrollment charter school and a child care facility on property zoned in R7.5 single family district on the southeast corner of R.L. Thornton and Ann Arbor Avenue. Item 49 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding an application for and an ordinance granting a planned development district for R7.5 single-family district uses on property zone and R7.5 single-family district on the northwest corner of Biscayne Boulevard and Tiffany Way. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on any of the three zoning cases that I just read into the record? If you would, please come forward, state your name and your address for the record, and indicate whether you are in favor or in opposition of the case, of the zoning case, whether it's 47, 48, or 49.
Yes, ma'am. Misty Ventura, 9407 Biscayne Boulevard, Dallas, Texas, 75218. I am the applicant on agenda item 49, and I support the request and staff and CPC's recommendation for approval. If there are any questions about the application, I'm available to answer them. Thank you.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak on the item that I just read into the record? Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Please.
Oh, I'm sorry. May I?
Please.
Bill Bowman, 2300 Springmere, Arlington, Texas. I'm the applicant on item number 47.
Okay.
I'm in support of it and would be here to answer any questions at the appropriate time. Thank you.
Terrific. We appreciate it. Thank you. Ms. Cook, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, I want to go back to number 47 and ask the staff some questions. Are we finished with that portion, Deborah?
Yes, ma'am.
David, colleagues, this is a cell tower that's over off of Abrams and LBJ, and there's going to be some amendments, David, so kind of help me through this, okay? The reason they require three-quarters of a vote is because there are four property owners that surround...
Ms. Coop, you're going to make amendments to it?
Oh, well, I guess, yeah, amendments.
Okay, let me do this. Let me take a motion on 48 and 49. We'll deal with that, then we'll come back to 47 and
50. Okay.
It's been moved on and seconded. So this is on 48 and 49. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or... Okay, let's go back to 47 individually.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. The reason it requires three-quarters vote is because there are four property owners that surround it, and two of them own buildings there. It's kind of in an industrial section, a commercial section, have just submitted cards that I guess they don't like it. Currently right there is a cell tower, and they have the opportunity to build two more cell towers right today. Is that correct, David? So there'd be a total of three. That's what I've been told. I mean, if they wanted to, right.
Yeah. I mean, basically, the tower at its existing height could accommodate additional providers.
No, my understanding is they could actually build two more towers there by right.
Yes, at that height.
At that height, right. Okay, so there could be a total of three towers there,
yes,
individual towers. The applicant has asked for just to rebuild one tower and put three arrays, which are the cell phone arrays, on that one tower. Even though the tower is going to be higher, there won't be three separate towers there. I think that's probably a good idea. I think that's probably the way to go. I think it's less intrusive on the area as far as what the zoning is there right now. But I do have some requests for the applicant, and if I can get him up here, I've had a conversation with him earlier today.
Sure.
And David, before you leave, the SUP is for 10 years?
Yes, ma'am. As currently drafted, the SUP would be for 10-year, but also eligible for automatic renewal.
Okay. Thank you. Couple of things. On the site plan right now, your intention is just to build one cell tower with three arrays.
That's correct.
Okay. One of the things I'd like to do in the motion is limit you to those three arrays. And the reason I'm saying that is because the pads on the ground that you show on your site plan, there's five pads on the ground. Is that correct?
Correct.
So, in theory, it doesn't have to happen like this. In theory, you could put two more arrays up there to coincide with the two pads on the ground. And colleagues, why don't you tell them what the pads are for?
The pads are for the telecommunications equipment as well as the backup batteries, standard installation equipment at a cell site.
And how many of those little units are on the ground right now today?
One for Metro PCS, who is the current tower occupant.
Okay. So what I'd like to do is just match up the applicant's idea about the three arrays with the number of pad sites. And so that would be one amendment. And David, just kind of help me out. That would be one. And the other one would be right now, currently, there is just the opportunity to have a wrought iron fence along the southern edge of the property. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like the wrought iron fence to be carried all the way around the property.
Okay.
I do know the owners next door, and I think at some point they'd like to use some of their property to build another building, and so I think that would look a lot nicer. And they don't have water and sewer to that property. Is that correct? The cell phone.
The track of cell towers on, that's correct.
Right. So there would be no opportunity for landscaping. Okay, well, those would be my two amendments. Now, was there something else, David, that we needed to take care of?
No, I think if conditions allow a maximum of three, that we had to make it eligible to share it, but maximum of three carriers. Now, my only concern is that we've got a site plan that's going to have to be amended as part of this.
Right.
So it may be appropriate to approve this with the ordinance and site plan to come back at a later date.
Do we have to approve that too?
Yep. The site plan shows where the fence is to be located, and the conditions in the proposed ordinance would show where the fence is to be located. So we would need from the applicant a new site plan, which we probably couldn't get attached to the ordinance to deliver to the city secretary's office by
the
day.
But that has to come back to the council again?
Well, just as a miscellaneous item.
Oh, okay.
If you approve it today
with this
understanding, then we just schedule it.
No, he can have multiple carriers, more than three, but he can only have three arrays and three pad sites.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
There can be a multiple carriers on one array.
Well, typically you only have one per array because my understanding is the antenna equipment would conflict with each other.
I don't know that I have a question about the, or I don't have a problem with having multiple carriers on one array. It's really the arrays that I,
right.
And I
don't know whether they're technologically, we can phrase the ordinance that it would allow for that.
Okay. Then we
would
have
that,
three that, separate entities, if y'all, everybody understood that, the three arrays, the three pad sites, and the wrought iron fence, then I would move to approval of item number 47.
And just to be clear, with the ordinance and site plan to come back later day.
Yes.
We're closing the public hearing,
closing
approving the request,
hearing.
But with the
right.
ordinance and site plan to come back
come
later
back.
Day.
Okay.
Did you read out, that's all a part of the record, Ms. Coops, the site plan and Davis, all of that's coming
yeah,
back.
Do you want me to repeat it? The site plan, the three arrays, the three pad sites, and the wrought iron fence around in the entire property.
Thank you, Ms.
Okay.
Coops.
So that's a motion with the amendment, seconded by Mr. Newman. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, 50-50.
50 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding an application for and an ordinance granting the renewal of specific use permit number 1601 for commercial amusement inside limited to Class A dance hall on property zoned a commercial service district at the west corner of East Grant Avenue and St. Mary Avenue.
Mr. Mayor, within 21 notices, property owners have returned a few of their requests, received three replies in favor and one reply in opposition. Require a simple majority to approve this.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the recommendation of the City Plan Commission? Anyone that would like to speak in favor? Mr. Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move that we approve item number 50 and go under the recommendation of staff for the three-year period.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. I'll need a second on this.
Second.
Mr. Newman, thank you very much. Again, with the same certification review as was mentioned this morning, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered.
Madam Secretary.
Item 51 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding an application for and an ordinance granting a regional retail district and a resolution accepting deed restrictions volunteered by the applicant and an ordinance granting a specific use permit for an animal shelter or clinic with outside runs on property zoned a community retail district on the east line of Walling Lane, south of Skillman Street.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 15 notices to property owners within 200 feet of their request. We received one reply in favor and three replies in opposition. It will require a simple majority to approve this request, but it is a designated zoning case.
Thank you.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the recommendation of the City Plan Commission, which is to approve? Anyone that would like to speak in favor? Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Again, this will require the 2 seconds with certification. Ms. Cadane?
Is there...
Sir, I think you've got some opposition.
Please come forward and state your name and your address for the record.
My name is John. I cannot really good professional speaking that I'm bringing my friend with me. He's going to talk to me.
My name is Justin Williams, speaking on behalf of Mr. John Wang. He lives next door to the proposed property.
Okay.
Fine. So I guess to make a long story
yes,
short.
Yes, I'm sorry. Proceed.
Okay. He is in opposition, being the next door neighbor to the property and the proposed zoning change. He is in opposition to that. Things such as noise, depreciation of property value and such to his personal residence.
So the issue he's raising is potential loss of value given the zoning change this month?
That is the primary reason, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that it? Okay. Anyone else who would like
Any
to
other
speak?
Speakers?
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Cain, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've been thoroughly over this case, and the entity going in there is a good, clean entity that's going in. They're actually a school and a hotel for dogs. But what they do is they train dogs and they keep dogs for a period of time for folks. I've looked at this and I can't see a problem with it. It's been vacant, I think, for 2 years. And that's where that would be a problem. And I think that would be a deterrent to my value next door. Also, in that area, there's several things that could go into that facility that wouldn't be amenable to the entire neighborhood, which is maybe another beer store or bar or these type things. So from what I've seen and what's going in there, I think it'll be an asset to the community there and also to the shopping center. And I'll be excited to get something in the building. So with that, I'm ready to make a motion. That's all right.
Please.
Okay. Agenda item number 51, that's Z089-250. I move to close the public hearing and follow the City Planning Commission recommendation for approval with the following changes to the SUP ordinance. The SUP is approved for a 5-year period, but is eligible for automatic renewal for additional 5-year periods. Outdoor areas are limited to areas A, B, and C. Area A is limited to 2,235 square feet. Area B is limited to 5,070 square feet. Area C is limited to 1,575 square feet. In areas A and B, one attendant must be provided at all times for each 6 animals. In area C, one attendant must be provided for each dog in the area at any time. So that's my motion, Mayor.
Thank you.
Second.
And I'll need 2 seconds. Those are for Mr. Newman, Mr. Matinsky, Mr. Allen, Mr. Ms. Davis.
No,
Ms. Hill. We got lots of seconds. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, would you read into the record 52, please?
Item 52 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding a proposal for an ordinance changing the name of Central Expressway between Pacific Avenue on the north and Grand Avenue on the south to Cesar Chavez Boulevard. We have two speakers that's already
tied up, Mr. Speakers. Mayor. I would like to make a couple of introductions. I know there's a couple of elected officials, and we appreciate each one of you being with us. First, Dr. Elba Garcia, former Mayor Pro Tem. Elba, thanks for being with us. A good friend of yours, Domingo Garcia, former council member. John Loza, again, former council member. John, you come in. Next is State Representative Burnham. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. County Treasurer Joe Wells. Joe, thank you very much. And then finally, Judge Lena Lavario, Court 204, I believe. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it. And there's also representatives of both LULAC and the NAACP, and we appreciate all of you being here, especially past residents. With that, speakers, ma'am?
Two speakers that have signed up, Mr. Mayor, Bill Gibson.
Now, let me ask, are there other speakers other than the ones that have signed up that would like to speak? Let me get some sense. If you can kind of raise your hand so I can get 3, 4, 5. Okay, fine. We'll limit it to 2 minutes, given the number of speakers, 2 minutes. That's even better. Appreciate it.
Mayor Leppert, honorable council members, especially my old council person, Tanel Atkins. I am Bill Betson of 6717 Cliffwood in Dallas. I'm also a Dallas school teacher who took the day off for this critical event. I'm here to provide some history in support of renaming Central Expressway downtown in honor of Cesar Chavez. He was born 83 years ago this next March on his father's Arizona farm. He grew up as a second-generation American farm boy, knowing well the hard work of the farm. But like so many U.S. families, his family lost their farm during the Great Depression. They became migrant workers. After serving in the U.S. Navy following World War II, Cesar Chavez again labored as a farm worker. He married and, with his wife, taught farm workers to read. He organized voting registration drives for new citizens. Chavez was greatly influenced by the peaceful philosophy of St. Francis of Assisi and Mohandas Gandhi. In 1962, Cesar Chavez started what became the United Farm Workers Union. He perfected methods of nonviolent resistance so as to obtain basic rights and justice for farm workers. He improved the lives of millions of the poorest of the poor in the United States. He spent much time in Texas, visiting Dallas about 20 times and staying with supporters here during his work. The name of Cesar Chavez is more often present in the Texas State Historical Commission website than almost all the names in downtown Dallas streets. His name will be the only downtown Dallas street that is also honored with a state holiday. Cesar Chavez died of natural causes 17 years ago at the age of 66. He was awarded the nation's highest civilian award, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, in 1994. He lived and taught the moral and ethical values that are required for a great city. He said, "We cannot seek achievement for ourselves and forget about progress and prosperity for our community. Our ambitions must be broad enough to include the aspirations and needs of others for their sakes and for our own." One of the statements of Cesar Chavez reminds me of you, the city council, sitting here today. He said, "When any person suffers for someone in greater need, that person is human." You each could have a much more comfortable life if you had not volunteered your time to be sitting here every day, almost every week. I mean, you're constantly working for us. May this renaming of a part of Central Expressway in honor of Cesar Chavez help our city to more often reflect the presence of the value of service. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Our next speaker that signed up was Mike Lovelo. Hello. And then we'll proceed, Mr. Mayor, with the rest of the speakers.
Yes.
1 minute.
Can we just go in order here of what our plan was, if you don't mind, sir? Okay. I'm Beatrice Martinez, LULAC District Director. We cover the Northeast Texas area. I'm here to support the naming of the street after Cesar Chavez. It's not only about one man, but it's about our city. It's about the legacy that you all will leave for our city, for your grandchildren and other children. We need to have a legacy, and you can be part of that legacy today. I hope that you will support changing the name to Cesar Chavez. Thank you very much. And I'd like to also thank the Planning Commission, it's specifically Joe Alcantar and John Lozano. They really helped, as long as Chief Salazar and previous city council members that have been working on this for a very long time. Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor, city council persons, my name is Hector Flores, and I am one of those young people that said that Chavez helped out of those labor camps in Texas, in Arkansas, and in Mount Summit, Indiana, and in Michigan. I lived part of my life in the 50s, going from camp to camp where we worked the fields, but it was those child labor laws that Cesar Chavez and many others helped to change in this country, where it put us in a classroom instead of out in the field cultivating the fruits and vegetables that went to America's families. I appreciate the fact that you've taken it to this point to listen to us today. We know that Cesar Chavez is, while he is an American icon, he just happens to be Hispanic. He made great contributions to this country, particularly representing the powerless, those that have nobody to advocate for them. He was a strong advocate for those of the least powerless in our country. And, you know, I think that many of us fail to realize the impact that he had on those children like myself as he went out with his different campaigns to try and convince not only Congress, but the states and the policymakers in our country to protect these workers and their children. I hope that you vote today affirmatively to support honoring him with Cesar Chavez Boulevard. Thank you so very much for listening to me.
Again, let's try to keep it to 1 minute.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Mayor Leppert, members of the City Council. My name is Mike Lovolo, and I reside at 616 Crystal Avenue, East Dallas. I'm here to ask for your support the name change of a small portion of Central Expressway to Cesar Chavez Boulevard today. I'm a human rights, workers' rights, community activist, and I'm also your appointment as vice chair to our Community Development Commission here in Dallas. After 27 years in Texas, it still puzzles me to this day to think that I live somewhere where nobody thinks twice about naming a road after a famous football coach or another sports figure. Yet we can take years to decide if a road should be named after a great, hardworking activist who helped shape this country and fought for every U.S. citizen's rights. Cesar Chavez, a Mexican-American farm worker, labor leader, and civil rights activist, co-founded the National Farm Workers Association, along with Dolores Huerta, which later became the United Farm Workers Union. His work led to many improvements for laborers, mostly minority, who did backbreaking work in the fields to provide every citizen of this country with fresh fruits and produce. From workers in the California strawberry fields to workers in the lettuce and fruit fields of South Texas, he fought to ensure that these workers received an honest day's pay for an honest day's work. Cesar Chavez led protests against the use of deadly chemicals in our farms, not only to protect the workers that cultivated and harvested our food, but to protect all of us who consumed these products as well. This was greatly evident with the grape boycott in the mid-70s. Chavez, not only a workers' rights advocate, worked alongside activists like Martin Luther King Jr., Robert Kennedy, and Dallas's very own Pancho Medrano, fighting for the civil rights of African Americans, Mexican Americans, gay and lesbian Americans, and other minorities. As a second-generation American and a minority myself, I have witnessed discrimination as far back as I can remember, and I've witnessed it again during the debate of renaming Industrial Boulevard after Mr. Chavez. It did not take a rocket scientist to see that selling million-dollar real estate would be easier on Riverside Drive than it would be on Cesar Chavez Boulevard. I read about it in the newspapers and the blogs daily. As a human rights activist, I know the only way to conquer discrimination and hate is to educate. And I feel that naming a very small portion of Central Expressway will help to educate our citizens, especially our children, of how this great country was built to be inclusive.
Terrific.
While our leaders in Austin,
take about 10, 15 seconds to summarize. And then
while our leaders in Austin are looking at ridding this man from the children's textbooks, I ask Dallas to take to the lead and show the rest of the state how important it is to remember our leaders that shaped our country and how Dallas has become inclusive of all. I hope that someday human rights activists' work will not be needed, and the only way we'll get to this point is to remember where we came from. Thank you.
Begin 1 minute, please. Good afternoon, and thank you for your time. I'm Reverend Lee Wallach, and I represent the Dallas Peace Center. And we're here supporting this change for one simple reason, that this beautiful man did things nonviolently. He was able to practice this. He taught people this policy, and he lived and demonstrated that in his life and in all of his problem solving. So to bring this type of idea of nonviolence in bringing about change by naming a street after a man who so beautifully and wonderfully has committed his life to this, we think is an honor for the city of Dallas in support of that idea. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Mayor Leppert and council members. My name is Patty Fink, and I am president of the Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance. DGLA's constituents in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community live and work all over the city of Dallas and span a wide, rich diversity that mirrors the rich diversity of our great city. I stand before you today to urge you to join your vote with the City of Dallas Planning Commission's unanimous vote in support of the street name change honoring Cesar Chavez. Cesar Chavez was a proud, patriotic American, indeed a U.S. Navy veteran, who is a recognized hero in the Latino community nationwide and beyond. His leadership empowered millions of Latino Americans to exercise their right to vote and to organize toward their full expression of the American dream, standing on the core principles of our founders, freedom and justice for all. We can all remember being a child or young adult, remember those moments or people who stood out for us as heroes to look up to, someone we could personally identify with in a positive way, someone who even in a moment sparked our passions for freedom and justice in our own lives and around the world. Like many of another generation,
you want to take about 10 seconds and summarize.
I will. I'll just conclude here. I urge you to support renaming the portion of South Central Expressway to Cesar Chavez Boulevard and to honor an American hero whose leadership and life story still have the power to reach into the lives of young Latinos, young Latinas, and every young American. Thank you.
Joe Wells, 509 Main Street.
Thanks for being with us.
Here in support of renaming the street Cesar Chavez Boulevard. Cesar Chavez was a great American labor leader and organizer. And on Labor Day in 1966, I had the opportunity to march with 20,000 Texans 3 miles down Congress Avenue in support of farm workers who had marched 500 miles from the Rio Grande Valley to meet with the governor of the state of Texas and ask him to support an agricultural minimum wage of $1.25 an hour. And the answer the governor gave was no, he didn't support the minimum wage, and no, he wouldn't meet with the farm workers. 3 years of organizing and marching more, and the legislature passed that minimum wage. Today, I want to commend the members of the council, and I know there's some that have worked very hard for this day to come, but I particularly want to commend the people behind me, because this came from the community, and it was the marches and the emails and the letters that has made this day come. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Esteemed member for the City Council, my name is Romero Luna from 1426 East Waco. I've come before you today with hope that this will finally bring a resolution to an effort that has been 2 years in the making to honor a man. The efforts have been carried out by students that attend classrooms in which they learn about philosophy, government, ethics. And today, they have a chance to learn a lesson from you, decided depending on the decision that you make. We hope that you vote in favor of this effort that has taken us so long to honor a man who came and for an effort to support our community, to support humanity, and today we can come together to improve a street. Tomorrow we can come together to improve a city. Thank you.
Thank you.
Council, my name is Cass Calloway. I live on the affected street. I live at Camden Farmers Market, and I have a unique perspective in that sense. I have two reasons why I'm in support of this. Number one, it's a great man, a wonderful man. I grew up a farm boy, as was said earlier, and I would like to thank Cesar Chavez for maybe improving the ability for me not to haul so many watermelons and so many bales of hay. I think there were a certain amount of beliefs that were instilled in our family, and especially with the no grapes and uvas movement. I think the second reason also, despite the fact that it's a great man otherwise, is that South Central Expressway has wreaked havoc with TomToms and Harman's Garmin devices for a long time. I think that would correct that for the community. And so I speak out in support, and I hope that all of you will too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Tina Yu. I live at 70551 Winchester Street in Dallas. As a member of the Korean American community, as well as a board member for the DFW Asian American Citizens Council, I'd like to ask you to support this change of name to the Cesar Chavez Boulevard for two reasons. Number one, we believe that the work that he did as a civil rights activist and his philosophy of inclusiveness benefits everyone, including the Asian American community. I also believe that the renaming of this Boulevard also furthers the goal that the city of Dallas has to establish itself as a global city and one of multi-ethnic dimensions. And so for these two reasons, I hope that you will support the name change. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, the city councilman, I stand together with my friends today and saying thank each and every one of you for affording us the opportunity to help build our city with inclusion, appreciation, and a sense of togetherness. It is with that confidence I want to thank you in advance for passing this resolution and following the recommendation of the Planning Commission.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Alberto Ruiz, and I'm here from Houston, Texas. I just took a break from law school to say hello and to see this through. We started this battle a couple of years ago, and I could say many things that have been said. By this time, you should all have a reference of who Cesar Chavez was and what he did in his lifetime and what his work in his lifetime has done for people to this day. Cesar Chavez is my hero. When he started marching, I was a zero. But as I grew, my mother told me stories about los rancheros and the fields, about the rain y el sueño. Cesar always knew that discrimination would be overcome, that our dreams would see the sun. That's why he fasted for farmers from Los Angeles to the Rio. He walked on the thorns of the fields, went to church on Sunday, and fought for equality and taught others to respect human rights. Cesar is my hero. He is one of many remarkable Latinos, interwoven throughout the fabric of America from Florida to Chicago. He is my hero because he never gave up on human compassion or the promise of liberty and justice for both rich and poor. Cesar is my hero. Today, I hope that you vote in favor of renaming Central Expressway to Cesar Chavez Boulevard because we can see his vision and see that there is a cause yet to follow.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Juanita Wallace. I reside at 1409 South Lamar, Dallas, Texas, 75215. I'm the president of the Dallas branch NAACP, and we represent over 400 people here in Dallas and over 2,000 branches, over 500,000 members. We say to you, inclusiveness is the ideal way of being. We say to you that multiculturalism is the way to be. With this naming of the Boulevard, certainly that's going to be an inclusive idea. Also, will bring to our children the idea that we're all working together. Thank you very much for naming it, because I know it will pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Well, we appreciate all of you being here. Mr. Salazar, would you like to begin?
Thank you, Mayor. First, let me thank everyone for being here today. I know that I have attended meetings, not only myself, but Ms. Medrano, Ms. Hoffa, with many of you, individually or in groups. When this started, it was a divided issue, an issue which many people wanted to support, and many people did not, for the reason that many people didn't know who Cesar Chavez was, or they didn't were not aware of how important this issue is, not just for the Latino community, but for all communities of Dallas. Sitting here today and watching the speakers, who did a really excellent job of representing their different respective communities, organizations, and as individuals, I can only say that this is the right decision for us to do today. I want to thank all of you who were not only at the meetings, but also many who in the audience were involved in the initial survey, which over 20,000 people participated, and who many who have now come today to say that they've thought about the process in which we're coming here today on this street for the renaming, and everyone has come together and are in solidarity asking for this change. I think if Cesar Chavez were here, this is in much the same way as he would have worked to not give up, to go back and talk to as many people as he could, to organize, to educate, and to be able to communicate. I think the communication has been done, and I want to thank the council members here around the horseshoe, as over the many months since we had those early votes, we've had discussions, and there's many different reasons why this is a very good choice, whether it's to honor an individual who's worthy of the honor, whether it's to help an area that needs strongly to have a firm identity with our communities, such as Farmers Market, and also economic reasons that the name Cesar Chavez is well known throughout the entire world, and definitely this would be a name that will brand this area of downtown that would make it easier for people to identify and to access. I especially want to thank the mayor for listening and prompting us to keep working on it, and certainly that's what we all have done. So with that, let me just say also that to Ms. Hunt, to Ms. Davis, and Ms. Medrano, I especially thank you for looking at this issue and considering it and appreciating the many merits that it brings to your respective districts, and what a great thing it's going to do for the city of Dallas. That being said, I would ask Ms. Medrano, and then seconded by Ms. Davis and Ms. Hunt when they speak, to move this item forward. Thank you.
Ms. Hossel, please.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. As a freshman council member, I just want to thank everybody that's here in support of this item. We all know how long we've been working on this, and I just appreciate you taking your time to come down here and express your thoughts. I especially want to express thanks to Jesse Garcia with the Blue Light Chapters. He did a lot to organize before today's meeting. And also, colleagues, thank you again for being open to this item. We just need to move forward. So thank you again.
Thank you, Ms. Hansel. Mr. Kelly, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me first say that it started out with disagreements and went from disagreements to disappointments, and now today it goes to celebration. It is my pleasure to be a part of making sure that we leave a legacy of those that were before us that paved the way for us is the very reasons that we are sitting here today. Cesar Chavez was one that is so deserving, and sometimes as you are moving toward making a decision, as this council and the city and community has been doing, you may not always win the first time around. Take it from me. I didn't win the first time around. But I arrived with the very best city council that I feel that this city has ever had sitting before and representing our Big D Little A Double LAS. we've made a lot of progress. I think that during the earlier struggles and discussions and disagreements, it is befitting now, in my personal opinion, that we celebrate and we leave in a legacy the name of Cesar Chavez, surrounded by the very things that he worked so hard to achieve and worked so hard for in the farmers market and downtown area. When you look at the very things that he put forth, and as it has been a testament of some that he came before to provide jobs and opportunities, and by way of the fruits and labor and the farmers, this is a strong honor. It's an area that will now even be branded and carry his brand further across the lines of history. I'm just very, very pleased that we have now finally come to the cornerstone of saying this is now a reality. Now, I will say this, and I'm going to be myself when I say this. There's still a lot of work to do. This is the beginning of showing that we are a city and a community. This is Cesar Chavez. We've done our Martin Luther Kings, and we have our Woodall Rogers and all of the other things. This is our community. In the area that I represent, I do not represent African Americans or Latinos or Asians, others, and Anglos. I represent citizens of this city. And you live throughout my district, and I want all citizens in my district and in this city to be a part and feel a part of this city. When we drive over to Farmers Market and we go down Central Expressway, I want all of us to now be extremely proud of the very road and the name that it carries as we drive through and across the city of Dallas with honor. Trina, this is a big move. This is not where we're going to stop, though. I want you to know that there's another name that I'm going to still throw out here that I want to see us put on the table today as we move forward, and that's the name of Pancho Medrano. He's my friend, and he is as deserving of his name being out here, and I know that you'll have to take a walk on that, and but that is something that we must fulfill as well, because I did not know Cesar Chavez, but I knew Pancho Medrano. Served with him on the park board, and he was a tough individual, and he had the commitment of the community. I want to just say that because I think it is now the proper time for me to say that. We're going to move this forward, I'm sure, and I will be favoring it, of course. But I want to begin the process of you all knowing that we still have work to do. It is nothing wrong, and I'm going to wrap it up, Mayor. It is nothing wrong with making sure that we educate. We have a responsibility to educate those coming behind us about those that were before us. And we must continue to do so. And I'm just so pleased that we finally agreed, and that during this All-Star weekend, it's an All-Star weekend for Cesar Chavez too. And we're going to have a major celebration because we are finding ourselves doing the right thing. I'm just so elated. And I want us to, I'm glad that you came back up, right? From Houston. I know you're in law school. And you came back up here. But you're the sign of someone that did not quit. I want you to know that. You and I, we were in my office and we were dealing with this situation. And I was looking around. I said, now, where is he? I was asking Ms. Medrano, where is he? She said, he's in law school. But you came back up here today to finish what you helped get started. I want to commend you for that. And then I'm gonna close this time for real. Raymond E. Holly is our coach, and I say that to you here at the Horseshoe, and to Mayor, you've never heard of Raymond E. Holly, but to the average and the majority of African American athletes that went to Booker T. Washington, and Roosevelt High School. Coach Raymond E. Hollis, some of you know, and I'm going to be asking for y'all's support. But at some point, and Trina, you know Coach Hollis, we must begin to take a look at that madrona to make sure that we do the right thing about a man that left a legacy, because he's one reason why I'm sitting here today. So I want to say that. I'm just happy. I could just talk because we're about to put it behind us. But I'm going to stop. I'm going to turn my batteries off. The mayor's going to be lecturing me in just a minute. So when you see him pull over here, he's going to be telling me how long I went and if we could have been out of here earlier and all this other stuff. But this is cause for a celebration. And I am just peacock proud to be a part of it. Thank you so very much. Thank you, Mayor.
Ms. Madrona.
Thank you, Mayor, and Mr. Caraway. First of all, I want to recognize former school board members Trina Garza and Mr. Robert Medrano. Judge Hassel walked in, and also Constable Cortez. Thank you for being here. Thank you, everyone, for attending today's meeting. I think we're going to make history today. I think Cesar Chavez would be very proud of us today, that we embrace diversity, we are inclusive, and want to thank the Peace Center, the women that are here because he fought for women's rights, for our religious group, our civil rights groups, our NAACP, our GLBT community. All of that is so inclusive, and that's what he stood for. He fought for civil rights, civil liberties, workers' rights, environmental issues. As someone mentioned, not only the right of the workers, but also the right for the public to know what was in our food. He fought against pesticides in our food and the dangerous effects and after effects that it has to pregnant moms and to future children. That's what he was about. We must continue to tell his story, his history, not only to California and to our farm workers, but everyone. His history is so important to what we do in the future. To Ms. Hunt and Ms. Davis, I brought the map to them and we discussed, and at the very onset, they said, we do not object. So I want to personally thank Ms. Hunt and Ms. Davis for coming right up out of the bat that they were in favor of it, and they had no problem with it. To our planning commissioners, thank you very much for your unanimous vote. Again, I think that this boulevard, as the planning commission put it, is quite significant. Some people may argue about that. I think that this boulevard is up and coming. We will have significant signage, which I will have a few questions about when the signs will be put up or displayed. And the linkage between the farmers market and the Latino Culture Center. We must learn about what the farm workers did during the time that they weren't at the farm working. A lot of it was the arts and the plays. And I know Mr. Garcia is here. The I Am Joaquin poetry and the plays there and what the campesinos used to do between that. And the times that they did the plays and the film and, you know, our famous directors that have come out from what they learned from the farm workers as well. So there's still a lot to be learned, a lot to educate. I hope that we continue to educate our future. But more importantly, not just naming the street, but really embracing what it means to our community. That these leaders that are here today, that they go out and educate, but also come and adopt the street. and making sure that what Cesar Chavez taught us, what he, his message was, what he fought for, how he respected the Mother Earth, that we do this on this boulevard, and that we have, that we continue to tell that story for many, many, many years. So again, thank you to the community. You are our voice. You are our bosses. And I thank you for coming out today. And I would like to, Mr. Salazar, have you made that motion? Okay. Then I will be glad to second it.
Thank you. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to thank Ms. Madrono when she came to me and asked me would I consider working with her and part of my district to a street change for Cesar Chavez, and I told her I had no problem with that. And I'm glad that I have some part of Cesar Chavez in District 7. When you walk into the Clean South Dallas House, Ms. Gilliam has a huge picture of Cesar Chavez in the Clean South Dallas House. Been there since the early 80s when we remodeled that house. And we always talked about Cesar Chavez at all our Clean South Dallas meetings back in 84, 85, and 86. But this is a time to celebrate. As we celebrated Malcolm and Martin, only two streets like this in the country, Dallas and New York City. This is time to celebrate. And Ms. Madrono, I want to be at the ribbon cutting. I want to be at the ribbon cutting. I hope you guys have a huge celebration, wherever it may be, with a lot of activity to celebrate Cesar Chavez. He's looking down on us, and I tell you, he's in heaven, and he's shouting. He has all the people around him who believe in the farm worker. They're all shouting in heaven and saying, hallelujah, hallelujah, thank God, hallelujah. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Huntley.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I want to echo what Ms. Davis said. Ms. Madrano, thank you for bringing this forward. And Mr. Salazar, thank you for bringing this forward. You both were instrumental in making sure that this great American is honored here in Dallas. So good work. I also want to thank all the folks who've come down here today to support this wonderful honor. And I'd say it's a long time in coming, and it's been too long. But we're here today, and I think the diversity of the group that's spoken today speaks to the heart of Dallas, the heart of our city, and I'm very proud to claim part of this road in my district. So I will second this motion, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Rackett, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Bill, will you stand up, please? And I would like to thank Bill personally. You know, he's my resident, my neighbor, my district, for going around and informed everybody about what's going on in our neighborhood in the city of Dallas. And we need to give Bill a big applause because he worked hard on this thing.
Thank you, Bill.
And I'm going to be short. Again, Angela, thank you. Ms. Davis, Pauline, Steve, also Dr. Garcia. I know you're not on the council, but you've been out there sharing the word, the ideas, what we need to do. I think what we did today is the right thing to do. Could have done it early, but sometime good thing come at the end. Again, thank you for being here.
Mr. Allenby.
There's just a lot of accolades going around, but I just want to add that to Dr. Garcia as a council member and working with you in the passion. Over these last 2 years, I've had the privilege of working with you and the passion that you've had for this all along. I just want to go on record of recognizing and saying from me to you, thank you.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded. I would like to add my thanks to everybody that's with us today. I think in one way or another, at various times during our conversations, I've had a chance to meet with most of you. And I appreciate the passion and interest that you've had in this, which is an important issue. I think I also want to thank Mr. Salazar and Mr. Alcantar for their work. I asked them to take a lead on moving this to conclusion and doing it in a positive way, and they have clearly done that. And I'll add my thanks to Ms. Hasso, a very special thanks to Ms. Medrano and Dr. Garcia for their work on this, too, and working with all of us to make sure that this happened. My goal all along was to make sure that we were responsive to the Latino community. This was an issue that was communicated by the Latino community as being a very important one, and being a very important one in recognizing Mr. Chavez, as I think has been articulated very well today, for his contributions not only to the Latino community, but to our state and to our nation, too. I think it was also important, though, and my goal was to make sure that we did this in a way that brought everybody together, that everybody could feel good about it, that when we came to this day, it wasn't just the completion of a task, but it was a way that we could celebrate our city and celebrate our community and do that in a way that really advanced our city. And I think, indeed, that's exactly what's happened today. So my thanks to everybody involved. It has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Mr. Mayor, all have voted on the motion. Voting in favor, Mayor Leppard, Mayor Pro Tem Carraway, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, Council Members Kadane, Newman, Cooch, McKenzie, Salazar, Atkins, Hill, Davis, Tasso, Magola, Hunt, and Allen.
Again.
Again, thank you all for being here. It was done in the right way, and I think it's a way that, again, we can advance our city, so we appreciate that. Madam Secretary, I think addendum item number 8 is next.
Yes, sir. Addendum 8 is a public hearing to receive comments on the proposed private sale by quitclaim deed of the two unimproved properties acquired by the taxing authorities from the sheriff's sale to Builders of Hope Community Development Corporation, a qualified nonprofit organization, and at the close of the public hearing, authorize number 1, the private sale under the HB 110 process through the land transfer program, as provided for by Section 253.010 of the Texas Local Government Code, by quitclaim deed of two unimproved properties acquired by the taxing authorities from the sheriff's sale to Builders of Hope Community Development Corporation, a qualified nonprofit organization, and 2, execution of a release of non-tax liens included in the foreclosure judgment and post-judgment non-tax liens.
Move approval. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor,
hold on.
Any speakers?
Yeah. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak on the item? Mr. Mayor.
No speakers, no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, our speakers, please.
That was Mr. Salazar and
Ms. Davis.
Great. Got it. First speaker, Mr. Mayor, from this morning, Deborah Gibson. Ms. Gibson? While you're coming forward, Mr. Gibson, let me recite the rules quickly for speaking. Citizens and other visitors attending city council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council, or while attending the city council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the sergeant at arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. You have 3 minutes to speak. You'll see an amber light, which means you have 30 seconds, and then the red light means stop.
Can I ask for extra minutes?
That would be up to the presiding officer, our mayor.
Okay.
But you can begin speaking and state your name and address first.
Okay. My name is Deborah Gibson Westbrook, and I'm an alumni at Grambling State University. And I really don't live here anymore, and I really don't want to live here anymore. I kept hearing Mr. Allen say, people who prey on people. Well, I have a case that's been in Dallas for 4 years because the prosecutors prey on people. The detectives prey on people. And they get a case that should have never been in the criminal courts in the first place, and they don't care. All they want to do is make everybody a criminal. And when you don't incriminate yourself, then they keep tossing you. I've had 5 different public defenders. They do nothing. And I keep hearing the city talking about not having any money. Well, I can tell you where a lot of your money is going. It's going to the public defenders down there sitting on their behinds doing nothing. Half of the people that's in Luke Sterrick, there in the inner city. On 4th of July weekend, I'm a producer for Dallas Media Network, who the city just dropped them out the budget, but I started off with DCTV. Over 600 and something people were arrested. 2 times they had already been arrested. 3 times some of them had been arrested. I was arrested. I was coming from doing a video production for a group here, and they were doing random stops. I told the cop that I didn't have a warrant for my arrest. He didn't want to hear it. They told my husband, they threatened him and told him that if he didn't leave, we were on a dark street. They made him leave me there. So when the female cop got there, she thought I was a hooker. When 20-something cars pulled up down in the bottom, all the people in the cars were all women. So all of us supposed to have been hookers, and W-H-O-R-E-S's, supposed to have been all hookers. I kept saying, I don't have a warrant for my arrest. I don't have a warrant for my arrest. I don't have a warrant for my... He wouldn't check it. He didn't care. I sent out a press release after I was released. I was there from Friday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. A lieutenant, Luke, I can't even pronounce the last name. She came on Saturday. She was apologizing. I had hyperventilated. They had to take me to Parkland. My blood pressure went really, really high. They were just so concerned about getting me naked and seeing my insides. They weren't even concerned about that I was hyperventilating and I could have died in there. So I sent out a press release when I came out. They did, I think, I don't know if it was Channel 5 or Channel 8, but one of the news people here did it. Over 600 people were arrested that weekend. Some of them had been arrested twice. Some of them had been arrested 3 times. And the response to the person was, well, it was a computer glitch. Okay, here's the case. I've been dealing with it for 4 years. It should have never been in the criminal court in the first place. And it went like this. I came here from Los Angeles. I took a job as a continuity director with a guy named Jim Carroll. He said, Ava said, I said, I stole a $29 chip from his camera. I have my own equipment. I have my own books. I don't need a $29 chip from anybody. The prosecutor, Lily somebody, they moved her around. She's no longer there. She refused to dismiss it. It should have never been in criminal court. So I've been tossed from this person to that person to this person to that person, and now nobody wants to do anything about this because I refuse to say, well, I'm guilty. I want to take a different plea. Now they're trying to act like I was never arrested the first time in Arlington.
I'm going to take about 10 seconds to summarize.
Okay, in 2005, I was arrested in Arlington. 2008, I was re-arrested again, twice on the same warrant, because they prey on people. The prosecutors prey on people. The detectives prey on people. The sheriff's department prey on people, and nobody wants to take the responsibility of it.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Our next speaker is Sam Gross, followed by Charles Hill.
Not present.
Ozumba. Lex.
Charles
Hill?
Charles
Hill?
It was a Charles
Hill. He upset with you? He must be upset with you.
I have to check on that.
My name is... name is our minister chief, Ozumba Lux. Can't you all see I'm in bondage? Look at me, I'm in bondage. I never was free. You understand? I'm looking for some liberty, equality, and justice. I haven't seen any yet. I haven't had any yet. What's going on, man? God bless America. America needs to be blessed. All praise is due to God. I caught 3 fish in my trap line every day. I don't know. Maybe we're going to throw them back. Dallas wanted to be a Dallas. They want to be a building. They want to make everything look beautiful. What are we going to do about the people? The people who helped build Dallas. Dallas is nothing without the people. Buildings, nothing without the people. This is all about money. Our elected representatives soon forget about us when they get in office. They think about themselves and their pockets and their money. In West Dallas and other poor neighborhoods. I was looking at a Hispanic neighborhood, I think, a few months ago on TV. I don't know where it was. They were talking about all the lead and smelter that were emitting all type of things out into the community. Over the people, the one little Hispanic baby boy, I think he had cancer, and they said he went back into emission. And everybody knew what was transpiring. They talked about all the political people and everything and that. And that. And you know, these things are going on. We know they're going on. No one seems to care. No one seems to hear poor people, but we are here. We have built this country. We should build souls. We should stay souls. We should worship and obey God. We better bring God back into our lives, man, because I'm telling you, we're going to hell, man. This thing is in bad shape. We need to pray for those who are incarcerated, unjustifiably incarcerated, because they are. Just like I tell you people, you don't want to listen to me. I don't know what happened to me and my family. But you know what? You put me in jail for something I was innocent of. You treat me wrong, they let me on my medication. You were wrong. But you know you sit there. We don't care. Do something. What you going to do, Ozuma? I called on the Almighty God. The power of all. He's going to do it. He said, Ozuma, I've been working. Don't push me. I work at my own pace. You feel it. You know it. Those of you who are the evil spirits. K-Dog God. He's the final judge. You can laugh, you can smile, do what you want. If you go to church on something you believe in God, they'll be procrastinating, jiving with God. God is going to take care of business. All praise is due to God, the Almighty.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is William Hopkins, followed by B.F. Randolph, Wayne Wooten.
Good afternoon. My name is Wayne Wooten. I want to thank y'all for what y'all just did. That's very seldom I get to thank y'all for anything, but thank you. This is Black History Month, and I just want to tell y'all something about history, Black history. See, our history starts at the pyramids. In Egypt, that's my history. It ain't none of you. Your patron, all y'all, you, brother, and stuff. Mm-mm. It's my history. So since my history starts with the pyramids, it's not going to end with Greg Ford. It's just a little speck of it. And when you erase something, when I ever erased anything, it was because I had made a mistake. And that's my history. In downtown Dallas, as middle class people in this city, was a mistake. I don't understand why. I lived in a community with teachers and doctors and lawyers and libraries and businesses and poverty-stricken people and upper class people and Dallas Express and Henderson Chicken and Pappy Dad's and State Theater, and that's the type of community I grew up in. And my children grew up in. My children swim in at Graves Park. It's the only Black swimming pool that was built in this city. That should be of historical significance. It's not that I don't like the plan of the Graves Park for another park, but not the Graves Park. I grew up in Little Mexico, Frogtown, where the Black folks lived in Frogtown and the Hispanics lived in Little Mexico, right across the street. I'm here in this Frogtown, this Little Mexico. But just like the park on Harry Hines, it has its history. Lee Park has its history. Samuel Park has its history. And I want Graves Park to have its history. I don't understand why there's a problem with Graves Park having its history. I don't understand why you want to erase my history. You changed the name of the school I graduated from. We had to fight to get that back. So, since we're not organized enough to stop you, we are now organizing. And I was taught how to organize by Ralph Davis Abernathy in Atlanta, Georgia, in the basement of his church. So, I don't want that part changed. What do we really want after the meeting at Pilgrim Rest Baptist Church when we first saw it is we want Greg Ford back. And I thank you.
Our final speaker, Mr. Mayor, is Jada Wooten. And that is it.
We are adjourned at 2:11. Thank you.